All right. Big, long guitar session. Finally. This is great. Okay. First of all, I could just talk at you. I just left a job as a university professor, so I can lecture. But I don't really want this to be a lecture. I was trying to kind of get to know some people, as some people came pretty early and stuff. But who is... We don't have the time to go through all the everybody's names either, but are you, who's from big churches, like over 500? Anybody? Okay, good, wow. Churches, mid-size, 4, 5, 600? Mid-size, smaller churches? Church plants? Cool, 100 or less? Great, great. A little bit about myself, who am I? I've spanned all of those church experiences. My name is Patrick Anderson. I think some of you I met at the last Worship God, we talked a little bit about some guitar stuff there. I am currently the worship pastor out at Christ Community Church in Daytona Beach, Florida. Before that, just until this summer, I was professor of music out at Cedarville University in Ohio for 3 years. Before that, I was out in Los Angeles doing grad school stuff, master's, finishing up a doctorate in music-related stuff, specifically guitar. Involved in the ministry at Grace Community Church with the Enfield guys. That just came out of like our normal Sunday thing. So I went from LA to that big church to little tiny church plant, Sovereign Grace Church Plant in Ohio with less than 100 people, which was a great experience just to go from all the resources in the world to no resources at all, and just think about, you know, do we need it to sound a certain way with, you know, specifically our guitar rigs or something, or do we need it to be a certain way for us to engage in worship? And we don't need any of this at all. We don't need any guitars. I should get that out of the way. Conference over. just to make beautiful music and to think creatively, that's where a lot of this stuff comes out of, to think creatively with what we have, even if it's one guitar and a cajon, or two guitars and a cajon, or two guitars and no cajon. So going from there to the church we're at now, which is kind of a mid-size, 500 or so, it's an Acts 29 church, they do a lot of church planning and things like that. So I come from not so much of like a church background musically, you know, studying music in school and stuff and just playing a lot and doing a lot of like outside kind of performance sort of things. But it was really through, I'd say, through the ministry at Grace and getting to know guys like Bob Coughlin and just the ministries of Sovereign Grace who are just pouring in and creating such rich resources for the church that I became much more interested in maybe being at a church or being at a university where you could pour back into people who wanted to serve in the church. And so I love doing stuff like this. And I've compiled a lot of, more than we can talk about here, a lot of stuff for you to take out of here. A lot of materials coming from an academic background, a teaching background, and a player's background too. So my website is up in the corner up there, patrickandersonguitar.com. I have put one post on there for you guys. I just put it up. We were moving during the last Worship God to Florida, and now we bought a house, and we're moving during this Worship God right now. So my wife is, well, I'll leave it at that. We have two little kids, too, so she's busy by herself right now. But that to say, there's not a lot on the site yet, except for one post that lists the big packet that some of you have seen before. There are probably some revisions as well as a few more things on that one page, resources for you to go in PDF form to download, to check out. It's all the stuff that we're talking about here, because even in a 3-hour session, there's only so much that we can talk about. I can't have you up here as like, you know, do a one-on-one lesson type of a thing. And so I wanted to create resources for you to take away from here. Take good notes, listen to the recording, practice for the rest of the year or longer. So that's available on the website for you, and I'm happy to talk, and only probably about 5% of the people at the last conference take me up on this. I really mean that I'm happy to talk. Just find me in a corner with a guitar and let's talk guitar stuff. I'm glad to do more one-on-one. I'm free for the weekend, so I'm glad to talk to you more and just dialogue on this stuff, because I know there's only so much we can do here, and maybe you don't feel like asking questions in this context, but I'm happy to help explain stuff, download the packets and things. Let's talk some more about some stuff. So happy to do all of that. Let's see. Okay, so that's that. We have the resources for you. We'll talk about it here. One more thing. I just really want to invite you to ask questions. raise your hand, stop me in the middle of something. I don't want to go too quickly. I realize that we have people at big churches, people at little churches, people who have probably been playing forever, and people who are maybe just transitioning into guitar. So for the new people, just hear me now. I really don't want to automatically, like, you know, just roll over you and you kind of leave here thinking everything was over your head. So for some of you more advanced people, I'll start kind of basic and try to build it up so there's something for everybody. But if you have questions, I'm happy to go, you know, into all that. And you can ask me, obviously, outside of this class, but if you ask it in here, I'll repeat it, and then people on the recording, you know, are going to listen to this. I've already gotten, you know, notes from people that were at the California conference asking about stuff, and so people will benefit from your questions. And this is a nice kind of small group, but okay, so feel free to talk and ask questions and things. All right, there's a lot to cover with guitar players. And guitar gear and things like that, and styles. We're not going to go into every single style imaginable. I want to talk a lot about resources for you to use, talk about how to practice that stuff. And again, you have the packet, but also maybe to go into some of your scenarios, like at your churches, like, you know, this last week it was me and a bass player, you know, what do we do? But, you know, so be thinking about that, ways that we can kind of apply it there. Okay. So I like talking to guitar players because guitar players tend to be like really motivated and sort of end up like playing for life and just collecting gear and just loving the guitar. And so that's great, but it's been my experience as a guitar player, as a person involved at the church, as a professor, as a teacher, that guitar players are also unique in maybe not knowing what's going on the neck sometimes at all. You know, I've experienced playing with guitarists, my students and stuff, not Zach, who have really good musical instinct, but I can hear them sort of like fishing for the note and stuff. So getting to know your instrument, there's some really deep ways we can talk about that I've gotten from great jazz players. And so, you know, there's some ways on guitar we can talk about that. But I find that guitar players just don't really know their way, you know, really well around the guitar. You have a couple like tricks, like, I love this voicing, I like this idea, here's the scale pattern I know. But the rest of the guitar neck is like an empty ocean, just it's frightening, you don't want to go there. So I want to give you stuff that will kind of feed into your creativity, give you resources to do more musically. Ultimately, you know, to be more of an excellent, intentionally excellent player. You don't have to be a shredder to give glory to God in this, but you know that we would create to the best of our ability beautiful music, because that's, you know, music is an art form, and yeah, we might just be playing in our church, but you know that almost calls, you know, really, if we think about it, am I more prepared for the concert I'm given somewhere, or like serving on a Sunday? And you know, we're playing for the body of Christ, but we're leading the body of Christ, playing for God's glory in that. You can do it in both ways. But anyways, I think that's a high calling, what you're all doing, what we're all doing. So I want to give you stuff for that. Before I kind of dive in, are there any things like you don't want to leave here without me kind of touching on a little bit? And I can, you know, maybe it's something I haven't thought about, or maybe it's something that I'll just make sure to talk about that's already in my notes and stuff. Anybody? Burning questions? I could just start calling on people. It's a professor thing coming out. Because I don't want to just lecture at you, which I could. Nothing?
Yeah. What you're going to cover today is, it looks like it's a little different from your seminar a little bit later, right?
Those are shorter. You know, here we're going to dig in more. And there I'll probably field some more questions and stuff. But we just have way more time to dig into. It's probably stuff we're not going to talk about there. So, anybody?
I had a question.
Yeah.
Could you talk maybe about how be creative, how to come up with ideas, but at the same time balancing that with still,
yeah. Yeah, one is, you know, really getting to know, you know, the term, I'm gonna teach you with great reservation and care just a tiny bit of theory. So don't complain, please don't complain on the reviews. Like, it was just about theory, though. It's not going to be about theory. But ideas like voicings, do you know that term? A voicing is just a way of playing a chord, like a G chord. I have three guitars around me. Why don't I just play one? Like, you know, this is a G right there, but so is this, and so is this, and so is, you know, that. Those are all different voicings of G chords all over the neck. And so really, you know, doing a lot of this stuff will help you be more creative. I find having a deeper mastery of this stuff helps you to... It's like when you're talking. So much of music comes back to language. You want to express a point. You want to be really, you know, emphatic about it or persuasive or something. You don't think of that so much as showing off. It's just kind of reaching into what you can do and sort of crafting it to be appropriate, the most succinct sort of purposeful way of saying something in the moment. And so the same thing with music. As you get this stuff down, you're not like, sweet, I just learned this lick off this. I'm going to use it on Sunday kind of a thing, although maybe that would work. You know, but you're just thinking, here's some practical ways, and then we'll get back into playing. I played guitar for a long time, and I really like hesitate to do a lot of guitar solos on Sunday morning. And I don't think that guitar solos are bad, but I really think about, like why am I playing a guitar solo? There's got to be a compelling reason that there's like a solo in this moment. Why wouldn't we just like read a verse or something with the band playing and, you know, and do that? Would that not be better? And then you think, would it be different if it was like a violin or something? That would be, you know, more appropriate and everyone wouldn't be so offended by a guitar solo. They'd think, oh, it's a violin, sweet. Or piano or something like that. And there's something to that too. But, you know, I really think about crafting the lines, either taking something from the recording or think about how should I lead from this section to this section, or what voicings should I use that are going to really set, which is a good segue into the first kind of thing we'll talk about. What voicings, what chords should I use? And having choices so you can set a song really beautifully. Maybe it needs to be really big, or maybe it needs to be really sensitive. And so having that all kind of, like having a vocabulary that's deep, you can draw from it. And so hopefully you'll have a lot of this stuff. But I think that kind of touches on it. And to make sure, you know, you're not showing off, because you'll know that. There was, in the last session, I don't know if DeYoung is DeYoung here? Talking about it. He was at the last to worship God, and he had this analogy, and this is all great stuff to be talking about in a guitar session. You know, as musicians, as leaders in the church on stage, you should listen to the message. He talked about, you know, we're serving the bride of Christ, and are we sort of like winking at the bride? Like, we're sort of acting as like the groom, because Christ is, you know, the groom. Are we sort of, you know, like winking at the bride as she's walking up, as, you know, we're playing on stage? Are we sort of trying to impress them a little bit? Because this is the bride of Christ. What, it was a great analogy. He said it better than that, but it really struck me. Like, when I'm thinking, when I come off of the platform or something, and I'm devastated because I messed up on a guitar solo, or I messed up a certain part, which we've probably all been there a little bit before, and the first thing you want to do afterwards is go back to your bandmates and like, oh man, I totally messed up that part. Which, you know, who cares? That's not the point. But are we kind of winking at the bride in a sense, sort of trying to steal the glory a little bit? And that's a great thing that you can only sort of answer for yourself. But again, digging into this vocabulary really helps you a lot. If that makes sense. I don't know if that's helpful. But that's kind of how I think about it. So let's start with acoustic stuff. And I think there's a good amount of like overlap between acoustic and electric. And I'm kind of thinking in like two very general areas with a lot of stuff underneath for this whole time. It's sort of like the stuff we play and then like how we sound. Because if you play amazing stuff but you sound awful, it doesn't really matter. And if your tone is like, I had a couple of students who would like come in, it was funny, the student came in and he brought in like this road case and stuff, and he's like unbuckling like this crazy road case from his like his cab on his amp and stuff, and he's got like John Mayer's exact rig, like his exact amps, like the Turok stuff or whatever he's using now, and like this fancy Strat, and it comes from a rich family. You can do that, but if you don't have the stuff to say, you know, and play, it doesn't really matter. And that can be a trap that we guitarists can fall into, just kind of acquiring gear and thinking that we need this and we need this. And sometimes you do, but or maybe not. But anyways, let's start with some acoustic stuff, because how many acoustic players, like just acoustic players, do we have? How many people prefer to lead from acoustic? That's another thing, too. I was talking about leading from acoustic or electric. If I really trust my band, to like keep time well, then I'll do electric, because then I can sort of sit back and sort of trust them and do more stuff on electric, because it kind of sustains a little bit more and stuff. But if I really need to beat out the time, I'll definitely go for acoustic. But let's start with acoustic stuff. Let me just grab this here. Okay. Is the person to whom this acoustic belongs in here? It's a nice acoustic. This is not mine, by the way. Okay, let's start with acoustic. Is it on? Do you have volume for me? Any signal?
It is coming.
Okay. Cool. All right. So let's talk about acoustic. Acoustic is, if anyone's, can we have like a moment of honesty here? Acoustic is sometimes seen as like the little brother of the electric. You know, sometimes you'd like rather be playing electric when the band's doing something gigantic and you're like, why am I here right now? Kind of a thing. but, you know, I'm loving playing this guitar. It's got a really nice tone. There is something so beautiful and unique about, you know, the acoustic sound. From just, you know, that doesn't sound the same on electric. You can use an electric sort of like an acoustic. But that just has like a woodiness to it, a fullness to it, that's really unique. Finger picking on the acoustic is, you know, there's just kind of nothing like it. Just a beautiful sound. Even just a simple little, little lines on acoustic just have their own feel and their own sound, so it really is a beautiful instrument. You guys who only play acoustic should consider branching into some electric stuff, and vice versa. You know, electric guys don't look down on the acoustic, because it is a really unique voice, and all of you should have one nylon string too, because it's amazing as well. Yeah, but I won't talk about the fingernail thing, so anyways. So with acoustic, you know, you tend, like in this style, and a lot of pop styles, we tend to play these open chords. You know, people talk about, oh, it's a Christian E or something like that. But these open voicings that we use just have a certain sound to them that really, there's a lot of ringing to it. Anybody like Jack Johnson fans? Yeah, you know, his style is more kind of percussive, and he uses more bar chords and stuff, which is more of a percussive style. You don't have the open ringing sounds, and we're not going to talk too much about bar chords. If you want to know, come talk to me outside of class. But for this style and a lot of pop styles, just kind of this open style of playing is really great. And the voicings that, you know, that you can come up with. It's too big. Are really nice. They just ring out and they have just a real openness to them. So anybody familiar with, let's start with just with voicings on the acoustic, and by voicings I mean chords. Anybody familiar with the whole caged concept? Couple people? Yeah. If you are, that's sweet. That's great. And I can challenge you probably far beyond how far you've taken that, so don't think this is like the beginner part. But this idea, this caged concept, is a great sort of guide for how a lot of chords work on the guitar, a lot, even in other styles beyond this type of strumming. And it gets pretty deep. Some people think this is like the answer to guitar playing for everything, and it's not completely. I'll talk about some other ways that are really cool if you want to practice them, that'll really get you into the neck. But this caged idea, this is sort of an acronym that stands for nothing, but it's an acronym that represents the chord shapes on the guitar that you play, like the C chord, the A chord, the G chord, the E chord, and the D chord. Does that make sense? And please, if this is like, you know, I don't get it, raise your hand and kind of talk to me. Okay, so these basic chords, C, A, G, E, D, are kind of the parent shapes of every chord that you play on the guitar. Like this E up here is actually an A shape with some open strings added. You know, I don't know, this is a G shape E, and we'll talk about this because if you're scratching your head right now. This is is an A-shaped D chord that I'm leaving open strings on. So once you get this down, it really helps you discover, you know, even myself, you know, messing around with it, I'm always discovering like, oh, that's a cool way to play that chord. And so this isn't just a beginner thing by any means. Okay, so this idea of C, A, G, E, and D, these represent kind of five chord families. And that's not an academic term, but sort of five. You know how you play the same chords in a bunch of different keys? Some of you more know more than others. well, the chords that you play in the key of C are like a chord family. I think of them as like the chord family of C. And the chords that you play in the key of A are kind of the ones that belong to the A family. And you tend to do them differently. We'll talk about that. But each of these, if you just think about it, how often do you just go for bar chords, you know, when you're doing this stuff? Probably not often. You know, it's kind of painful after about a minute and 20 seconds. And these just have the really open sounds to them, which are really useful. Okay, so let's talk just a little bit about the quality of each of these families, because they're not the same. These are five different ways to play basically the same chords. And can I give you permission to give you like a 1 minute theory moment? That'll help us throughout and really, and some of you, if you study music, know this a little bit, but will really help you understand and simplify chord progressions. And about the second or third sheet in the packet that's on the website for you, so please download that, has a list of these things, a way of organizing this, which will help you a lot. So, okay, in music, we have a scale. And a scale is something like this. In its simplest form, it's seven different notes because it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then it starts over. Like that, so you have seven different notes there. You number them in theory, so the first note of the C scale, C is the first note. It's the first scale. What is D? It's the second one. This is really hard. E is the third one, F is the fourth, G is 5, A is 6, B is 7. Is everyone following? Is that questions? So those all get number names. So if I'm in the key of E, Stephen Williams, what is the second note? F sharp, good, okay. You didn't know that'd be test, would you? Yeah, so does that make sense? Notes in a key get numbers like that. And every key, like the key of E, has seven different scale notes in it. So the chords that you play take on the same number names. So if I'm in the key of D, what's the D chord? It's the one chord. Yeah, we talk about it as the one chord. What's G? Use your fingers. D, E, F, G. I use my fingers all the time. Sometimes you just can't think. Sunday morning is early. Okay, so G is the four chord. So D is 1, E minor is 2, F sharp minor is 3, G is 4, A is 5, B minor is 6, C sharp diminished is 7. Does that make sense? Just the whole numbering idea. And really, stop me, because this is not... This doesn't take much to understand and process, but it's so helpful across a lot of different things. So you would write it out like this, a couple different ways in music. I'm going to use Roman numerals. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Circle. Okay. This is how in music we talk about the chords in a key. In any key. The one chord, the first chord, like in the key of C. The C chord is major, so this would be like C. So in any key, naturally, the two chord, the one starting off the second note in the scale, C, D, is going to be D minor. And then E minor, F major, 5 is G major, 6 is A minor, 7 is B diminished, which you don't often play in pop music, so we don't have to worry about it too much right here. 7, you don't often play. 3 you don't often play, although it's a great chord to use. Sovereign Grace tune, Behold Our God, C, E minor, C, E minor. It's a really good sound, so don't think you can't use 3. Try to use a diminished chord and see what happens. Okay, so there's also another way to think about this, which might be easier for you, and it's a Nashville numbering system. Anybody familiar? Kinda? Yeah, they use numbers. So if you don't like Roman numerals, you can just use numbers. And C would be 1. 2 is D, and now for minor, it's a little dash like that. So you might see that sometimes. And the whole idea that I want you to take away from, what am I doing? The whole idea that I want you to take away from this is not like Roman numerals and dashes and things like that, but that you can number your chords. So think about, how often do you play G, C, D, E minor in the key of G? Every day. Is it my favorite things to do? Every day. Not to leave, right, anybody? No. Okay. In the key of C, C, F, G, A minor, all the time. E, E, A, B, C sharp minor, all the time. Question?
Since I don't have them all memorized.
Yeah.
I find something that helps me is using the formula for the steps, like whole half.
Yeah, you could.
That way, if you're starting at an F, you say, well, what are the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 notes?
You can do that. I find that, personally, are you like an engineer or something?
What?
That's like, I asked if you were like an engineer or something. Take, like, putting it together, that's another way, but I don't want to confuse too many people. But there's a lot of ways that we can get, study some music theory. It'll open up your mind to a lot of the way music works, and you'll hate it for, like, the first week, and then you'll love it after that. but just the idea that there are numbers that you use, that you can associate with the chords that you use all the time. So, like C, F, G, A minor every day. G, C, D, E minor, and this is going to play into what we're going to talk about, the voicings and stuff. And I could go on, but do you see how, especially 1, 4, 5, and 6, and you'll play 2 a lot too, are the chords that you use all the time in every song, not just in church, but just kind of in pop music in general. Some cool things you can do, is changing that up and messing around. Does that always have to be minor? No, you can change it and see how it sounds. But that's just a quick and easy guide, and that's in the packet for you as well. So any questions on that? Because this is kind of, we're not going to talk about this the whole time, but I might reference it. Questions? Okay. All right, so let's talk about these chord families, because these are really important. And this is stuff that I find so useful as a player who's played forever. So each of these keys have different personalities. And which keys do you end up playing a lot in? You say, like, every Christian song is in the key of G and E, right? Yeah. And that's for a certain reason, which we'll talk about. But first is to getting to know these voicings. And I kind of have five different ways of categorizing in my mind kind of my go-to voicings for these chords. So you can think about just the basic versions, like, let's start with C. That big old bar chord F, which I'll give you suggestions for. G like this. Those are kind of like the old school versions of these chords. So some of those are really useful. I find in the key of C, I much prefer to play C like this than like what you usually play in the key of G. It just, like in the key of C, C is like the universe, it's like home base, and so this more straight C really works there. Or like in the key of G, you can get away with that D over F sharp, like that, and we'll talk more about that if you don't know it. But if I was going to start a song in the key of D and play like a D over F sharp and be like, I'm forgiven, it just sounds really bad. Because certain things work in some of these voicing families more so than others. So, okay. See, I tend to think in these categories, and that would be kind of basic chord versions. That might be too small for everyone to see, but then I have like common tone shapes. Then I have big voicings. I have colorful voicings. And having studied, part of my doctoral work is in music theory, and this is not a term that comes up so much like in your academic classes. So these are just ways that I like to think about it musically. You can do a lot of theory, you can do a lot of technique, you can do a lot of whatever, and forget that you're a musician. So don't forget that. Colorful, and then kind of these drone voicings. And I'll explain that. That will help you with the why am I here moments as a guitar player and when the band is huge. Okay, so basic chords. That would be like this F bar chord and things like that you're used to playing. Common tone. And this exists in some keys more than others. Like in the key of G, you know how you can do, and if you don't, now you do. you have that common tone ringing out on the top. And so you get from all the chords that da, 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 that note on top. that's why G, that's one of the reasons that G is so useful, because those two notes at the top, to have like a moment here for some of you who know about music, those form basically what like a power chord is. That's a fourth or a fifth, and it just has, and then I'll step back for everyone else, that has like, it just blends really well. So whether you know what that is or not, that just blends really well, and some keys lend themselves to it more. Like the key of E, where every key chord, you know, has those high open strings. These don't naturally have that, C, A, and G. So with the common tones, I try to find ways of doing that for some of the other keys. I used to really not, are there probably keys here represented that you don't like to really play in? Like, do you immediately think, oh, I'm gonna capo A shapes? I don't, because I don't really like the whole A family that much. We don't get, yeah. But there are voicings in there that are really useful. So I think we'll talk a little bit more about this, but each of these keys, these caged keys, represent a particular sound and a particular voicing. C has some that G doesn't. A has some that any of the others don't. And so you're going to want to use these in specific ways. And that'll go to the next step, which is using a capo, like a real capo master. Okay, so let's go back to C. This common tone idea, you just put your pinky on the top. That creates that thing that's in G, that's in E, that makes it flow really well. It's okay for the F chord, it's not my favorite. A minor with that note on the top. And these, you might have learned these 20 years ago, but I'm just explaining the concept. And the G like this, I highly recommend that you learn to play a G with third finger and the pinky on the outside in the key of C. You can do this, but look how far my fingers are moving as opposed to this. Yeah, it's a stretch, but you'll thank me later. You can do things like these G suses that you couldn't otherwise. And the key of C, it really like lends itself to that. So I used to not love the key of C, but with some of these voicings, it makes it really useful. So does that make sense, like the common tone? If I just play through a, let me give you an example. Listen to the top. There's kind of a melody with the top, and sometimes that's really cool, but with... Sometimes you don't want that. It's like a distracting melody in the mix or something, and so this common tone... Hear how it just kind of sits on the top and it sort of blends with everything? That common tone idea is useful, and that naturally occurs in G and E, and that's why they're so useful. Common tone idea. Does that make sense? And you can find these in any key. And you listen to some players like Pat Metheny, great jazz player, and you should listen to his acoustic stuff because he gets strumming in these crazy chords that are all over the place, and it's from beyond sort of this. But he uses a lot of common tone ideas, and it's really cool with what you can do.
Is there a certain note in the scale that should be the common tone?
You can use your ear. You can use your ear. For the people who don't understand or haven't studied like a lot of theory, you could just use your ear. If it sounds good, you could go for that and just do it. But it tends to be a lot like the root or the fifth on the top. And that just has like a really kind of a clean sound, and that's why power chords work so well, because they're really just built out of that. Okay, so then I think of my big chords, because, you know, you're going through the song, and then you get to the F chord, and you're like, you know, your whole big giant I'm strumming all the strings just kind of dies while you're doing like a half bar painful thing, which is not a bad voicing. You can use that and feel good about yourself still. But sometimes I look for voicings that that are really big. Like in the key of C, for example, you add this note to the bass here, and these are all in the packet. And like I said, I'm happy to talk to you for the rest of the conference every day about this stuff if you want to. And I'm serious. So like this C with the note on the end there, that's also the fifth on the bottom if you like that stuff. You're just fattening up the sound. So the difference between and you can hear this more powerful kind of bottom end. And for the key of G, I'll use that one. For the A minor, I'll definitely have that note on the top. And the F chord is the treble chord in the key of C, right? It's like a bar, little bar, or big bar. But there's some really nice versions of it that you can do. And for my big version, I ditch the bar chord but keep almost all the notes. So what you do is, it's kind of like, it's sort of like a C. You move a couple fingers over, and you grab the F bass note with your thumb. And this does not have to be pretty, you know, because that's a big reach. And that actually takes a little bit of practice to get that low end. But you're going to get a lot more power from that shape in F than you will from where you're just hanging on the front front notes and there are no open chords. So the actual first note here is open, and all the other five strings are fingered. Question?
You're playing the major seven.
It is a major seven. For those of you who know about theory, it's a major seven. And we're going to talk a little bit about what he's talking about right there, because I can explain it to you in a minute and 30 seconds, and you'll get it, and you can use this especially with like electric stuff. For like your pad sorts of things, it's really, really cool. But yeah, this would be an F major seven. And you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because these numbers after the chords, like a C, you know, add 13, flat two or something, nine, I don't know. You know, you can get these confusing, you know, sort of lists of directions after a chord, and you can almost always avoid those. Like if it's a B7 sus 4 or something like that, you can just play a B chord and it's fine. Those are suggestions, kind of like taking a recipe for vanilla ice cream and adding some chocolate chips or whatever else makes that more interesting in a sense. And so, yeah, those major sevens, twos, suses, and stuff, those are really good to know about. And we're going to talk a little bit about them, because you should get started on understanding that if you don't already. But that was good observation, good ear there. But this is my big voicing for C. So I could do, if the song's getting really big, as opposed to, you hear the difference? Big G and the A minor. I can really strum all the strings, which some of the keys, they don't, especially C, A, and D, they don't lend themselves to that immediately. So you have to find some of these big voicings. And again, we're starting sort of basic here for kind of the wide group that we have. Okay, so big voicings, but that's an important part of what I'm thinking about here. And that goes with the drone ideas as well, which we'll talk about in a second. Colorful chords. These are kind of where those major sevens and sus twos and things like that come from. And you don't have to know about them to enjoy them. You just have to. Some interview with Paul McCartney was talking about, like, did you know the chords you were doing for the song? He's like, no, it's just the pretty chord. And so, you know, just be a musician. Don't get overly technical about it. But the more you can add to your knowledge about it, the more you can handle this stuff and apply it to any key, because you learn some theory and it just applies to every single key the same way. And so it really does help a lot, but you don't have to know it. Okay, so colorful chords, there's things like taking the C, adding that to it, adding that, lifting up a finger. Something like that. So you see what I mean by color? It's got kind of that color to it. F is one. This is one of my favorite like voicings for these open chords. Take this big F and just whittle away. This is nice, but it's still big. And that thumb around there doesn't lend well to. For the colorful category, I tend to think of like lighter strumming or picking or something like that. And that thumb around really, you know, makes your hand kind of cramp up sometimes. So. I ditch that, and when you're doing lighter playing, which this would, you know, kind of lend itself, the colorful tends to lend itself to, you can have less of the strings covered. Like for a big voicing, I wanted, you know, everything covered with a couple open strings. But for a colorful voicing, I might want like, you know, I love this F. It's just the third fret here. You're taking like this F chord, leaving the first string open. Leaving this middle note open, so you're only holding down two. It's just a great sound. It's got, for theory people, it's got a second and a seventh in it. For those of you who don't know about it, it's the pretty chord. But it's just got a nice sound. You add the A in the bass, like the open A right here. I love that sound. Beautiful sound. And so that's a great voicing. That's in the packet as well. So that would be an example of color chords. The A minor, a couple that I like. And I won't spend too much time on every key here, just to give you the idea of kind of how I think and how I might apply it. For the A minor, that's good. This is good. This is good. That's okay. But there's some cool ones. Like, I think I found this one by accident one day. It's just a nice chord. These are all in the packet. That's like an A minor 9. But these are just nice voicings. That's actually the chord that, you know, off the Gathering album, Have Mercy on Me? That is the chord that I started off with. Something like that. I can't remember how it goes. But something like that. But that was the chord that I used, just because it has, and this kind of goes to your question, Blue Checker Shirt. What's your name?
Greg.
Greg. Goes to Greg's question about how you'd be creative and you'd feel like you're not trying to show off or something. I was thinking with this song, which fits, it's kind of like a song of confession, or it's very much a song of confession, I wanted a chord that had like a yearning feel. So Bob says, come up with an intro, and I'm thinking, okay. You know, that says to me, like, my heart, you know, it I don't know, it says confession to me a little bit. So it's like vocabulary. You learn these chords. You learn to think in these categories, or whatever sort of makes sense in your mind. Take this and run with it. And you're able to apply that in the moment and not feel like you're showing off, because it's just part of your language, I guess. So these are the main categories with drone. And I don't have a good drone chord for C, but some of the chords really lend themselves to this. And this comes from playing a lot of Irish music over the last few years. I lived in Ohio, so I played a lot of bluegrass and Irish music, which is fantastic because I got to meet these great Irish players. This guy from Ireland, we'll talk about him in a bit, but who use these drone chords, and they'll just do that for like the first part of the whole song, and it sounds awesome. And this is something, these drone chords, switch to a different key here. Let's switch to E, because you all know this one. That one there. When I'm playing, this happened at Cedarville. I was playing with, we had a great gospel choir, like huge, 200-300 people, and the band was awesome and stuff. And there, the guy who led it asked me to play with him, and he wanted me to do like a version of As the Deer, picking sensitive, so I'm going for these more colorful voicings and stuff. And then he said, just play with us for the rest of the song. And I thought, okay, great, because these are gigantic songs. And they have like 3 electric players, and here I am, you know, strumming. but when the band got really big, I would go to more of these drone voicings. And you sort of become, as an acoustic player, and this is a good part for like big songs, you become more like a texture guy. Because if the song is huge, you know, gigantically huge, you know, you're not going to hear a lot of detail, because everybody's going drums, bass, keys, electrics and stuff, vocalists. You're not going to hear a lot of detail. So sometimes I find these drone voicings. Or for all the chord changes, you know, dun, dun, dun. You can hang on that one thing at the top, and what you end up hearing in the whole mix is just this dun, 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 kind of what you might do as an electric player when you're just like using a voicing like that. And so I'll pull out just a couple more that I think are useful. But do these kind of categories make sense? That's how I think of my voicings quite a bit. Let's look at another one, G. We all know G well. Basic voicings would be. But these common tone ones, where you kind of, you know, the pinky and the ring finger stay on the top there. And honestly, you can ditch this finger down here, because half the time you're muting it anyways. But that just gives you, you know, a chance to kind of move around with this finger and do some other things. But common tone first. G, C, E minor, D. Even A minor with that one note on top gives you that high ringing note, which really blends well with the band, blends well with the other instruments. You have that kind of ringing through, and it just sounds good. That's why a lot of guitar players capo to play in G, because it sounds good, myself included. So common tone with G, you're probably pretty familiar with that. Big chords, G, the chords often sit over all the strings, and so those are just naturally big chords. You know, you got that, except D, you don't really want to, you know, play that low note. You can do a D over F sharp if you want. D over F sharp with your thumb is a cool way to do it. And then the E minor, of course. And so those are great, really big voicings, which is another reason why G works so well for so many songs and is the right choice. You don't have to feel bad about how he's playing G. It sounds great. That's why you do it. Colorful voicings. These right here are some great examples in G. These are some really nice G chords. This is the best one, I think. E minor. just has this, you know, this nice dissonance in it that's really cool. You can move the bass around the note, and like, here's your C chord. This might be a little colorful for some people. That's cool. Or the D, you probably played like, slid a C chord up and played a D like that. That sort of takes, you know, you can see I'm keeping these fingers here. That's one example of some colorful chords in G, but so would these be. Taking that top note off, dropping it a half step, forgetting that low note, because again, oftentimes when you're playing with a band and it's really big, you've got enough low end. You know, from the piano, from the bass player, from kick and stuff like that, that you can leave out this low note on the fifth string and just add it. Sort of mess around, and if you don't know like what's the right finger, you'll just mess around. You'll find out that this is not a good sound. Agreed? You know, then you can move on and never play that fret with a G chord again. So that's, you know, some great kind of color examples. You can also, you know, move this G chord around. But these color examples are things that maybe wouldn't be, like, this isn't a great strumming chord. In my opinion, maybe you disagree and you're going to use it and it's going to be awesome. But for my brain, and you should just, you know, take this, you know, go with it. We kind of all think differently. You're going to find voicings here that you like, and you're going to find voicings here that you don't really like. And so, you know, just the idea would be to give you some stuff to jump off from, start exploring, think about it, get some new voicings, come up with your own. So those are kind of like the color voicings that I sort of play a lot in G. That's nice. But the drone one for G is kind of cool. It's also kind of painful. This I got from this Irish guitar player who had put his thumb around, grabbed the G, grabbed the fifth fret, fourth string here, and then bar the first two strings on the third fret over here. So just try it. It's hard. But he would do like... You have a lot of that to play around with. And he had gigantic thumbs, I think, because that's hard. Now, that's a good one. And let's see. It's shoot me an email if you want the tune that he does this really cool stuff on for finger picking. But it sounds really great. It's actually not picking, but it's a really delicate strumming. And you get like the melody in it and stuff. But that's what I would probably do for the G drone. Here's another one up here that you can sort of use. It's not as good, but it's like taking a C chord and sliding it all the way so that your ring finger's on the 10th fret, leaving out the middle. And you get kind of this pretty open. So that's kind of a drone chord, and I'm just looking for these all the time, you know, basic chords, and it could be something totally down here with just your finger right there, and you just discovered this beautiful, sweet chord. Or it might be, you know, you put your finger somewhere by accident and find this great chord. And that's the thing that we love to hear on recordings, right? You hear this, like, fresh, like, oh, man, the singer-songwriter is doing this really cool thing, and then you see a video of it or something, and you take it down, and you're like, that was so easy. But it's just spending time, you know, developing your vocabulary like this. Let's do... go quickly through A and D, and we'll talk about cut capo stuff. So A, one other thing, this is for the theory people, G and E naturally work really well because they have that those common tones on top. And so they naturally work really well because they have that fifth built in. And we might talk about chords, so if this is over your head, I'll make it quick. These other keys naturally have like the thirds toward the top. And just chord theory and count it 10 seconds. You have these notes, root, third, fifth. It's called a triad because there are three notes. Try, get that. And the root is, again, the thing that kind of defines the sound of the chord. The fifth is sort of neutral, open sounding, and the third gives it the quality. Like, that makes something major or minor. I just changed the third. So anyways, I'll talk about like a third or a root or a fifth or something just in a chord, but not too much. And again, I want this to apply to to those in the room who are a little bit more maybe basic players and are hoping to get some stuff, and maybe just, you know, insert a few moments like that into the people, or for the people who are a little bit more advanced. Okay, so let's see the key of A real fast. Again, it kind of has a brighter sound to it than this. I don't know, that's how I'm thinking of it in my mind. More colorful, and like my typical chords that we're playing in every key is that 1, 4, 5, and 6. It just is. So for A, that is A, D, E, F sharp minor, and sometimes B minor. 2 works well. And those chords, like I just take a song. I love when you do this, and then you can think of like no songs that you know at all. But if we do like super high, come thou fount. Come thou fount of every blessing to my heart, sing thy praise. Something like that, and we do that rather in the key of A, you'll hear the difference. You hear a lot more movement on the top, moving around like that. So there's like this melody on the top, and it's not to more maybe modern contemporary ears blending as well as. Do you hear the difference between G, D, C, G, 1, 5, 4, 1, and 1, 5, 4, 1? A is just more colorful, and that just sometimes doesn't blend as well with the band, or just doesn't sound the same to our ears. Does that make sense? So that's often why you don't play in A all the time. Although there's some good voicings, you know, this A2 that you've all played. You drop a finger here. It's an Am7 with the second, for those to whom that means something. Or it's the pretty chord. But some nice voicings there that you get to that F sharp minor, which is kind of cool. I like that a lot. But you're sort of stuck down there. So my basic chords in A, you know them. A, E, D, F sharp minor. Common tones, I could do this, but it becomes really hard to play. I wouldn't recommend it. You can't really do the common tones as easily in A. Big voicings, again, it's not working the same. I don't go for it all the time. Colorful, there are some nice ones. A D with the open top, like a D2. Drop another finger, get that, put that bass note in there. That's a cool chord. Or this F sharp minor, this works really well in the key of E2. You have this big old bar chord, you're playing this great. You know, and then you go to this A chord, which just stops all the notes ringing and everything. And it just doesn't flow as well. But this one right here, where it's like you're taking part of the bar, but it's a 6th string. It's like you have an A2 right there, those two notes for the A. And you put that note, 2nd fret in the bass, and it's just a really nice open one. You can slide it up for E over G sharp. It technically has a 2nd in it, but who cares? So that's a really nice F sharp minor that works. That works for bigger strumming too. Drone chords, this is where A really works well. In playing with this gospel choir, they did, I forget the song was called, I think it was called Freedom or something, but it was this really big, like, driving song in the key of B. So I knew with a little capo trick that I could use A voicings if I went to, you know, the 2nd fret here. We'll talk about that in a second. And we go till 5:30? Is that correct? Sweet. We're doing great. Okay. When the band got really big, I went up to here, and this voicing for A is actually a power chord, but it's, let's take the capo off here. It's the 7th fret here, the 9th fret, so 4th string, 7th fret, 9th fret, 3rd string, pinky on the 2nd string, 10th fret, and you get this, I mean, that's a big, powerful, open, clean sounding chord, right? So that would, these two kind of are, have crossover here. That was big, but it's also my drone chord. And my sort of definition of a drone chord is, one, you could probably play it over most of the song and it would sound good, but two, you can like, So that's what I might do for a big old gigantic song where everyone's going and you tend to think, you know, the why am I here moment. You can go to this big chord that has more of this. Like that. And it just has a certain, you become more of a texture player, I think. That's how I thought of myself when I was doing acoustic and the band got big. More of a texture thing. How great our God, sing with me how. And I could even stay on that A while the bass player is doing this. And you hear like, sort of sounds like a minor chord, right? The rest of the band will do that for you. So you can hang on that chord. And we'll talk a little bit about substitution that I find so useful. But anyways, that's my big drone chord. And I'm just lifting up fingers, finding the roots of other chords around there. And that might be hard if you don't know any of the notes. And that's why I made the packet for you. So that would be E sort of speaks for itself. You know, they're great. The basic chords, you know, some of you might be doing this. Or this. But, you know, there are these movable shapes. That I'm guessing most of you play all the time. Nice variations on these. That are still big because you have all the strings but add color. This C sharp minor is really beautiful. Extra points if you can, like, grab a harmonic or something like that. Okay, so E just lends itself to having common tones, we sort of talked about that, to being big voicings, to have some good color with it. There's your major 7. I'm going to look at you for every major 7 chord now. You know, a minor 9, yeah, that works okay there. Or, like, up here in E, these work well for the drone things, obviously you play that one. But you can lift up this 5th string, now you're playing an A chord. You got this B right there, C sharp minor, a note you can play with on top. And that just creates this da-na-na-na-na-na-na over the changes that the whole band is playing. And that's like this big drone idea. So we've talked about a bunch of these now. D is a unique one and a good transition to cut capo or altered tuning stuff because D is another one with a really bright, happy kind of top end. It's got, happens to be the 3rd on the top if that means something to you. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. So if I'm in the key of D, help me out here. What's 1, 4, 5, 6 in D? D, G, A, B major?
Minor,
yeah. And if that's new to you, you know, don't worry. But this is a really good thing to think about. If you're kind of thinking, I kind of get it, you know, I don't know about that. Come talk to me and let's talk about this. And I'll show you the handout. I think this is like my copy of the folder and stuff for you. So you can come look at it afterwards if you want to. Okay, so if I'm playing, you hear all the changes in the melody on the top end? That's D, and that's maybe why you don't go to it at first. Question? Yes, there is, with the one caveat about the website, I've been moving, we have small children all summer, so I just took a new job, and so there is one post for you all that I put up this morning, and linked the packet to it, and a couple other, I broke out parts of the packet, because it can kind of be big, so I broke out like the triad section, power chord section, open chord section, so you can look at them individually too, as well as a couple little scale things, but I'm going to start putting a ton of stuff on the website, because I really want to, and the reason why I love doing this, and I created the packet, one for my students out of my own experience, but I love giving resources, and you know, I could probably learn some stuff from some guys in here. You can learn something from anybody. But I love giving resources, you know, it's with the training I've had, creating resources for people, especially who are going to pour back into the church. so I love that. So I'm going to start fleshing this out more than what we can even do in a 3-hour, you know, such a session, just with like little things, stuff you can download, and just if we can do some video stuff, we will. But I'll keep posting a lot of content to the website that'll go through a lot of these ideas, and I think help a lot of people at a lot of churches. And I'm even thinking for, you know, I think it's important for you as a Christian musician. One, you should be serving in your church. You know, I think if you're a good musician and you're a Christian, you should be serving in your church. But you should just be making good music too. If you're interested in that, you know, you should be a reputable musician. You know, if you live in Louisville, you know, good music doesn't just belong to people outside the church. You know, you should be writing good songs that maybe aren't necessarily worship songs, but just being a good musician. So these tools to just feed into Christian musicians in the world, in the church, is what I love to do, as well as play guitar. So, okay, what was I talking about? Yeah, that's all on the website. And right now there's just a little bit there, but it's there for you. And let me know if there's a problem with that, because I just put it up this morning. Okay, so D, colorful sound, right? You hear a lot of those changes in the melody. You can strum really big on it, but I find that the chord voicings that blend a lot are those common tone ones. And D doesn't lend itself to that awesomely. You have... It's kind of hard. You can throw your finger up there. I haven't found that to be really useful. Especially because it's a... Well, permission for a theory moment here. It's the fifth on the top. It's kind of sometimes better to have the root on the top. That blends a little bit more. But enough on that. So anyways, D also, like... That's off limits, you know. D is everything from here on, so you have to. It might lend itself towards more kind of picking that's more colorful, more sensitive. You know, here's a good D chord. I saw Keith and Kristen Getty play. They came out to the university, and they did off the new album. They did that Mother's Prayer. Do you guys know that tune? Yeah, just a really beautiful song, especially if you have kids. And Keith was just picking with these. And just playing with a lot of these D chords. And those are all D chords. And so it's just kind of a nice, and those should be in the packet, just nice colorful voicings. Maybe it's not the one I'm going to like. Or maybe that sounds okay. One thing I was doing is kind of wrapping my thumb around and sort of half very carefully muting the E string. Because then you can strum really big on D, and you won't have to just, like, hope you don't hit that low one. Sorry, now it's three. Okay. There are a couple drone chords in D that are kind of cool that I got from Irish music, and that's, like, you know, that D, nothing new, but throwing your pinky up here. It's just a cool sound they use a lot for Irish music. Also... You have a couple of those drone chords which work well, but D you're often stuck with that low note. And if you do drop D, which I think I have some drop D chords, that's nice, especially if it's in tune. But now your G chord looks like this, which is not that bad. It moves every root up 2 frets. And so, you know, I actually play in that a lot, because that'll give you different voicings that are easy and different ones that are hard.
On the Irish D.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You throw your pinky up?
Yeah, and it's actually better in drop D. So I'll have like what's typically like a D chord, leave the top off, refinger it for like with fingers 1 and 2 there. And so for the people for the recording can hear this, it's good to go slowly. I'm going open, first finger, second finger, open. I throw my pinky on the fifth string. So now that's 2 D's in a row, fifth and fourth. And with the low drop D, so I'm doing that, doing like dropping below or even doing this. I was thinking of an Irish song in my head. But yeah, you can move around your pinky. And grab those. And it works really well. So that's a good Irish one. There's a I think it's by John Doyle, is a real famous Irish guitar player. And he did a video on like playing Irish music and stuff. And he talks, they're all over the neck with like all these different chords. And like making bass lines and stuff. And it's really cool. And I learned a lot about rhythm playing from Irish guitar stuff. It was pretty sweet. And some fresh ideas that you probably, you know, might not find in the church around, you know, that type of music. But that does open to you to, I'm going to mention this probably a couple times, maybe for Electric 2, tenths. Tenths are an interval, an interval. That's the idea of, an interval is another theory thing. And that is just the space between two notes. And you might be like, you know, I don't know anything about theory. Well, now you do. So it's that easy. It's just the space between two notes. And so we talk about like if like the note C to D, that's C to D. That's two notes, right? Well, the D, then you would say is a second away, or C, D, E. It's a C down to the E. That's three notes away. So that's a third. They're big ones and small ones. We don't have time to go into all that. We don't really need to. but this idea, that's just called a tenth. And that's actually... well, it's useful because we'll talk about this with electric playing. if you take a number of those notes from the scale, remember I was talking about that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then it just starts over at 1 again. Well, just from these, you've seen like a C2 before. That's just when you take a C and you add the note, a note away from C or a second away from C. So C, D. You just add the note D. And you don't have to know that you're adding that. But I just want you to understand a little bit about the numbers. So if I have a C major 7, I'm adding a 7th. I'm adding whatever note that is from C. So like, you know, 1 is C, D, E, F, G, A, B. So I'd be adding a B. So that's kind of how the number thing works. So where was I going with that? Oh, tenths, yeah. Have you ever seen like C9 or C11 or C13 and thought, what are they trying to do to me, these keyboard players who made this chart? That's where you just take this idea and you keep continuing it. So 8, you never really talk about playing an 8th, but for the sake of what we're doing here, that's how you think about it. 12, 13. And so 8 would be what? C. 9 is what? D. You just keep going. E, F, G, A. And so a 9, an 11, and a 13 come from that. And notice that's the same as a 2, an 11 the same as a 4, and a 13 is the same as a 6th. And just for the sake of it, the 4th is usually the sus. So if you see like a C sus, that's usually the note they're adding. They're adding the 4th. And, you know, again, happy to flesh this out more for people. And if you have questions about this right now, let's talk about it. You can stop me at any point. And again, your questions will probably help someone who's listening on the recording, so don't feel shy. Okay, so does that make sense? Arrows, circles, things like that. So that's how you can talk about like a C9. It's the same thing as a C2, sort of. It goes into a different function, and that's when you sign up for like, you know, Theory 101 or something. But did you have something? Not really. It sort of doesn't matter where you put it. But just to mention this, like those 9s, 10s, and those 9s, 11s, and 13s, those tend to be more for like jazz and blues and stuff like that. More for, like this is a C9, and this is a C2. That kind of a thing. This is a C add 2. But you can definitely hear the difference between like a C9, especially if I play it right, or like a G13. Sorry, tuning. Rather than just a G with an open E, which is the same note, but, and this gets into like theory stuff, which is helpful to know, but not crucial to know. So I just want you to sort of understand a little bit where these numbers are coming from. Not that you have to become a master of using them, but for you electric players, it's a little bit more kind of necessary to understand. But the idea of a tenth is just, it's a really big third. Does that make sense now? Long way to explain. A tenth is just a really big third. Same note. and you don't have to call it a tenth. You just have to know about these voicings a little bit. It's real melodic sounding. So one of our Enfield tunes. Something like that. They're really cool voicings that are kind of a big spread. You can play them on any of the strings. Like, here's another one. And you start messing around with these. Everyone, do you know our Rock of Ages, Enfield Rock of Ages? It starts with this. Here we go. That's using this idea of these big tenths. So that drop D just lets you play around with that, which we'll get into dadgad stuff. Do you get this idea of thinking in these chord families with basic voicings, common tone voicings, the big voicings that you'll play and strum on, colorful voicings, and maybe a couple drone ideas? So now you can only play in the keys of C, A, G, E, and D, which for some of you could work out. But when you add a keyboard player who doesn't have a capo, forgets their capo one Sunday, you're stuck with like B flat or something. And there was something which came up at our church recently where we were doing a song that was in the key of, let's just say it was in the key of C. It was in the key of A. And I thought A was just a little bit too high. So I thought, I'd love to go into A flat. But then I asked one of the guys who's been there for a long time, do you think everyone could play in A flat? And he just sort of laughed. So maybe not yet. And so I had to move it down to like E or something, or F sharp, or I can't remember what I was doing. From A minor to like F sharp minor. So the key of C to the key of A. And so you might be stuck making choices like that, if you only know these keys. And vocally, it can really help sometimes if you're just reaching for that high note. Or like a lot of songs do, they jump up the octave, like Cornerstone or that Grace and Peace. They jump up the octave, which can be really powerful and sometimes impossible. What was it that, great musical example, a lot of Hillsong stuff. What's that song? With Everything, With Everything? Where it goes to... that really big part at the end. Sometimes the range of a song is like almost too low and kind of too high. So if it's too low and you want to range it up, now it's, I would say it's only for super worshipers. If you take it down so people sing the high part, it becomes like really low for the men's range. And so, it's really helpful to just drop a song like by a half step sometimes, but that gives you what do you do for the key of B flat? We know what you do with the capo, but some of you might not. So let's talk about another aspect of cage, which is really useful. And this is a really important thing, even to deep electric stuff, this caged idea. So don't think like this is all review for you. There's some great stuff to get out of this. So caged represents the main families that all the chords you play from all over the neck come from. That makes sense? Like an F bar chord like that is actually an E shape, just moved up with the bar on it. And this F sharp minor is also just an E shape. It's made minor, but you can move these around. They're the shapes that all the chords you play all over the neck kind of come from. But it's also the sequence that voicings move up the neck as the same chord too. So let me say that again. Cage is also the sequence that chords move up the neck if you've used a capo and you've ever thought, instead of doing like in playing in A, I can capo 2 in G and play in G shapes, and that's still in the key of A. I'm so glad that it worked out to a word, that it wasn't like something else. But this worked out to a really easy acronym to remember, and this I wrote out painstakingly in all of these keys and a couple others, I think, in the packet for you, because this is a hard thing to see at first, and I'd be happy to sit down with you in like a one-on-one during the conference. I'll be carrying around a guitar with me the whole time. So let me show you what I mean. This is the sequence that the chords move up the neck. And this is all over the internet too, so you can look it up. So in the key of C, the chord down there is the C chord. The next voicing of a C chord up the neck is an A shape C chord. And I can capo to make it a little easier, but I would really, and I'll give you a couple suggestions. Some of you might not be ready for it, but some of you, might be. And some of you on the recording could be the same way. That's still a C chord. That's a C. Here's a C. Does anyone have another guitar? It might be useful to have someone with another guitar. So now, what's the next voicing of a C chord up the neck? We had C, A, the G shape. And that is a big pain to play without a capo. But if you played a lot of Bach, you can do that. So I would sometimes, you know, you can do this with a capo. And let's start there, actually, so it's really clear. That's still in the key of C. What's the next one? Everyone knows because it's just that. It just goes through the letters. That is not it. Trick question. There, you hear how it's the same now? That's just a high E there. And the next one is in ukulele zone. Sounds like a toy box up there. You might not capo, but maybe you could up there. But that's the sequence that C chords move up the neck. Now, this is really useful on a lot of different levels, but let's apply this to some other keys first so you can see the concept and how that works. Let's do the key of G. So now we're starting in the middle of the word, and what's the next voicing going to be? E, then the D shape, wherever it is, and then it goes all the way back here, C, A, G. Does that make sense? If I was in the key of D, the next voicing would be C, then A, then G, then E, then D again at the octave. And the same with the C shape. After the D shape up here is the C shape again. And then it's again. And then it's again, the G shape. And so on. So for G, and again, I wrote this out on a piece of paper so you can see, like, with fret numbers and stuff, okay, I put my hand here, because this is hard to get from just now. But again, it's a concept, and it's ideas for you to practice throughout the year. So the G shape, then the E shape of G, then the D shape of G, then the C shape of G, then the A shape of G, then the G shape of G, and then the E one, and so on. Does that make sense? Let's do one more. Which one do you want to do? A, okay. What's the next shape? The G shape. I tend to abbreviate that because this is really useful for you to know without a capo too, because these also represent scale shapes. So you have like the C shape of a scale. And that just fits over the C shape. If I'm in a different key, E flat, and the C shape happens to be right here, it's the same exact shape. So maybe you're thinking, I'm never going to play a scale, and that's okay. But for those of you who want to get into this, these represent scale patterns too, which are really useful. You start associating scale notes with chord shapes, and it helps you remember them rather than just like a series of unrelated dots throughout the fretboard that you hope you get right. You know, if you need to do a line up here or something, and you're like, okay, what is a scale here and there? Here's an E. Yeah. Okay, now I'm good. Instead of just knowing that, oh, it's a G shape in E or something like that. And this takes a lot of, you know, it takes practice, but so does anything, you know, worthwhile. Okay, so we're doing A. The next shape is the G shape, which I tend to, again, abbreviate that, like this. And you can see, if I were going to play a G chord like this, I could just abbreviate it like that front end, and I'm happy to show you that. So I'm taking this full G shape, which is a pretty big pain to finger like that, with your finger as a capo down there. And so I'll just kind of, you know, feel free to kind of just grab the front chunk of this because it helps you just to see them or to use a capo. So the next shape would be an E shape of A. So that's actually an A chord, but visually on the guitar it looks like an E, right? Then next would be the what? D. And then C. And then you're up at A again. And then G again. And they just cycle through the neck like that. Any questions on that part?
Why do you use that?
That is a fantastic question. Did you have a question before we go into that?
About three frets?
Sort of. It really helps to get to know the roots and stuff. It really helps to get to know the roots. You wouldn't have to convince a piano player that it's really useful to know the notes that you're playing. It's really useful. But the guitar players we can get by with just being cool and like whatever, man. You know, but it's so helpful. It is so helpful. Let me tell you, it's so helpful. Okay, so why is that useful? I'm so glad you asked. That is useful because now, for any song, I can play it, and it's any of these that make sense, capoed up the neck, and they all, do you remember how I was talking about each of these families have kind of a different personality? E is... And D is like that. And those kind of sound different, right? Or G, you could do those tricks. or C, that F I love, that's really only in the key of F, or sorry, in the key of C that comes up. And so each of these have a personality. And so I can think, okay, we have a song. I brought a pile of songs. They're somewhere. We have My Redeemer's Love. We're doing tomorrow morning in the key of C. My Redeemer's Love is super. You have that. You know that song's from the Age to Age? Yeah, Age to Age album. And deeper than the rolling seas, higher than the mountain peaks. Okay. Each of these C, A, G, E, and D families have a personality and their own tricks and stuff and their own sounds. And so I can play that in almost any one of them that makes sense. It, obviously, at a certain point, it gets too high, but you always have, with any chart that you're playing, you always have at least two more up the neck that you can choose. And so let's say, for some of you who are at a church plant, and you maybe have like two guitar players right now, it's so cool if you're not just playing, you could just play the same chords, and like I said, you don't need all this, but to be maybe a little bit more musically interesting and set the words maybe a little bit more beautifully, one person could, actually if someone can get a guitar out, that would be sweet. Yeah, acoustic. And think, okay, these are the options I have in the key of C. These are probably too high, but these next two will almost always work. And so that gives me C shapes, A shapes, and G shapes of C. Using a capo to move it around, that will still work in the key of C. So G, that's great. You know, I can capo 5, and I just have all these memorized, so we can talk about how to practice this. But, you know, if you just strum, let's just go C, F, C, F. And what is that chord progression again? C, F, what is that in numbers? Yeah, and so that's why this is so great to talk about, because I can say, let's just do 1-4-1-4. And this is what you have to do. Once I, let's say our song is 1-4-1-4, C, F, C, F, and that's our whole song. I have to think, well, if I capo somewhere else and I'm thinking in a different key, sort of, different shapes, how do I know what chords to play? Well, this is how it works out perfectly. So if we have, like, thinking in those numbers, that's how you can transpose. That's a fancy music word for changing keys. If I have this progression, that's C, F, all day long, like that. I can, in my head, just think the numbers. This is the chord progression in the key of C, C, F. This right here is the chord progression in any key you want it to be. Does that make sense? That's like a transposing thing. And so if I was in the key of A, what's 1-4-1-4? Yeah. What about D? D, G, D, G. And I have a chart like this in the packet so you can reference it. Because this takes a little to wrap your mind around. But here, let's do C, F, C, F. Hear that first. Now these are the same. Nice voicing. And so we're using two different voicings, one lower, one higher, to create a bigger sound. And two, just multiple layers. Kind of the cardinal sin. That's great, thanks. Keep it out, though. That's just sweet. Kind of the big problem that a lot of like worship bands have in churches or just like young bands is that everyone is going for rhythm all the time. And so the acoustic player is doing this, and the piano player is doing this, and you know the drummer's doing whatever he does. But everyone's just going at it, and just, you know, he can do that. Lay that down again. He's doing C, F, C, F. I can just do a simple. Something like that. Now we're getting different layers going on. High stuff, low stuff. I could do it like this, too. I jumped all the way to G because G is great. Let's go to A. 2, 3, 4. And do you hear the combination of the two guitars? That was different than the G one was. Even though I don't love A shapes and that whole family as much, sometimes it'll combine really beautifully with whoever's playing down low. And that's one application for why. Does this kind of satisfy part of your question? Now there are, you know, you can go to the, thanks for getting guitar. Each of these, again, have different personalities. So, you know, G is really big. And so if I have a song that I know is going to be like really kind of digging in, I might capo 5 G shapes. or if I want to do something, and that's also higher. So you can think about where you're sitting in the band, you know, with what other instruments you have. Maybe it's another acoustic, then maybe you want to go higher. Maybe it's just a keyboard player, bass, and drums, and you're the only acoustic, but the keyboard player is kind of doing a bigger spread in their hands, and so they have some high stuff, and you want to kind of hang down here just in the normal sort of C voicings of C. And now you have aspects of like a range to think about, a range of like lower chords to higher versions of that chord. Capo 8 E shapes is, you know, unless you have a, you're probably not going to be sliding around too much like you do in the key of E. So that's, you know, one application here. Does that make sense? Do you want to do another key? Is that good? No? Good? Okay, so that's one reason why. The other reason would be, let's say I just love this voicing, but we're doing something in the key of not one of these. We're doing something in the key of E flat. Okay, so I just know from playing guitar forever that capo three, C shapes is E flat. And so now I can get this. As opposed to the same chords, you know, in a different voicing, or that was E flat, that was wrong. You know, that would be the same thing as, and I'm just using some colorful voicings that I like, and so now you have choices. Your favorite voicings kind of exist uniquely in each of these keys and not every one of them. And so you might think, oh, I'd love to do that thing I do in the key of G, so I capo right here and I can do that. Even though you could have played down in the open strings, so that's really why you use it. And that's why it's so useful to get to know this cage system, especially as an acoustic player, because this is called like essential tools for guitarists, that's my outline. Because I thought, what, and I was thinking for my students kind of in the worship major at Cedarville, what things do they really need to know as acoustic players, you know, just as, you know, musicians, but also in the church? What are really important things? And these are not necessarily easy things. These are things you have to think about and practice. But these are for you to be able to look at any chart, My Redeemer's Love, and say, okay, I could play that in C shapes just off the chart. I could do A shapes, capo 3, if I wanted. G shapes, capo 5, you have a lot of different options for that, for a lot of different situations. Playing with another acoustic player, just for the reason that you like the voicings in that key.
That's when your Nashville number system is so.
Yeah, because now you have to think, well, now those chords aren't, they are the chords, but they're describing a relationship of chords, and numbers is the way to think about that. You can, this is more traditional with the Roman numerals. This is Nashville. And so they're both numbers, and, you know, whatever works. whatever works. So now, between open tunings, other things, capo tricks and stuff like that, which we'll talk about, you have like 3 to 5 different ways you can play any song. Between like dadgad and the capo stuff, between cut capo stuff, between any of these capo, these voicings and capoing, you have 5 different, you know, ideas in the span of, you know, this much of the guitar neck, like up to almost the 9th fret or so, the 10th fret. And that's a lot of variation you have in how you want to set a song with a lot of different voicing ideas. So that's kind of a pretty big thing to think about. And that's why I try to put together in the packet. That's hopefully what you can reference back here. But a way to practice this when you see these charts in the packet would be to look at the caged flow and just practice like, okay, when I put the capo here, it's here. And I'm remembering like, where's the root of that chord? Okay, here's the root of the G, it's right here, I capo back here. This is laid out for you in the packet. I capo there for the E shape, then I capo there. And just getting used to thinking like this, serving, you know, if you don't, you're working like, you're serving volunteer at a church, you're, you know, working part-time as a worship leader, you're working another job normally, I know how draining that can be. And you don't have time to go home and practice for multiple hours on just the guitar because you got kids and husband or wife who are more interesting than this. But week in and week out, just be thinking about it and it'll start to accrue, you know, just every week, you know, over the course of a year, you're just going to get better. You go to the website, shoot me an email. I'll put my email on here or get a hold of me via there. And I'm happy to answer questions. I've been dialoguing for the last 2 years with people from the last Worship God conference, you know, on the phone, texting, via email, whatever I can do, via Facebook and stuff, because I really would love to help you and make sure you don't get stuck, make sure that you can develop your vocabulary for this. You can grow as a deeper musician for the glory of God, be serving, be training other people back at your churches. You know, take my materials, use them, you know, if you teach and stuff, and if it's useful for you. So we just want to kind of, you know, raise the bar musically as just humble kind of offering. But again, knowing that, you don't need to be really fancy or a shredder. So, yeah.
One of the problems that I have is I'm not a guitarist. That's not my main instrument. So that's why I'm here learning from you. I find I use Song Select online. And so many of those charts are just
We would make jokes about it. It always has the ending, you know, section on there, which you, like, the chords, there's no, you have no idea how they go and stuff, and often they'll be like B-flat major 7 on Jesus Paid It All, actually, they'll have like, you know, B-flat major 7, this and that, and slash something else, and stuff, and again, with all that extra stuff beyond the chord, you can usually disregard it, so if you see a B-flat major 7 over D, just play a, you know, a B-flat chord, if you know how to play a B-flat chord, or a capo 3 and play a G chord or something like that. So you can always disregard the numbers. Sometimes, you know, the chords can be wrong. That can be a useful tool. I use it as kind of starting a chart, and I'll, like, you know, take sort of, and then I'll arrange it myself and stuff and things. But yeah, you can always disregard the numbers. If you come across a B/D-sharp, just play a B. If you come across an E/G-sharp, look it up in the chart. If that's too hard or if you just don't want to play it, just play an E. So the slashes generally and the numbers after a chord are suggestions. So you can disregard that. And usually, yeah, like the intros or the outros or the instrumentals are sort of just a string of chords and you don't really know how they go. But okay, so you can practice this cage stuff. Think about this 1-4-5 stuff. Question. Yes, thank you. So I don't forget about that. So the key of D, you're sort of stuck with that. Unless you, you know, detune and you drop D, and that's cool. But then you have, like, you know, your G's like that and stuff. This partial capo, which again I have a part of the packet dedicated to this too. And just so that it makes sense to you, my pen. This board is going to look awesome by the end. You've seen, like, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Little chord charts like that, chord diagrams. For the cut capo ones, for me, mine, they'll look like that. And let me explain why. Somebody sawed the end off their capo. Now you can buy them, these little partial cut capos or whatever they're called. Some companies make some pretty fancy versions of them. There's like the spider capo where you can lift up all these arms and do some cool stuff. But here's your cut capo. Oh, and just a little bit about capos while we're here. This works for electric or acoustic. Sometimes, where's my red one? Somewhere. These Kaiser capos, I really like these Kaiser capos. They're great. They're quick. Just, you know, put them here, put them there. Open and close very quickly, but oftentimes the springs in them are way too strong, and they'll take your guitar way out of tune, even on acoustic. So what I do, and this just came from trial and error, is you put the actual capo on the back of the metal, like actually the back of the fret, and that's going to keep your guitar in so much better tune. Because what it does is it tends to push down in the middle. That's even a little different, you can tell. It pushes really hard in the middle of the string. Here I can pull it out of tune, just not pull it out, I can just push it out of tune by pushing too hard. If it's a really strong capo, it'll push too hard in the middle of the strings and make it out of tune. And so you actually put it right on the back of the metal fret. And you'll know if you've gone too far because it'll be all muffly, like that. That's too far. But you put it, an experiment with like the back edge of the fret. That's got ring to it, but it's actually sitting on the metal. And that keeps it much better in tune. For electric, I've even put them on top of the frets, and it still keeps them in tune because these are way too strong for electrics. For electrics, I like these little Planet Wave ones. They're the same kind of fast grip thing, but you have a little spring here. It looks kind of weird, but you can strengthen or weaken it. This red one is my favorite Kaiser capo, just because the spring is weaker. So that's all. Does anyone not have one of these Kaiser capos? Never seen them before in your life? Squeaky. Okay. With these Kaiser capos, these ones you can do this great trick in. You can use a partial capo or you can use this, where you take this normal capo and you turn it upside down and put it over strings 5, 4, and 3 on the second fret. And this relates to D shapes because you're borrowing from D shapes. So let's say I'm playing in the key of D and I capo 2. And you got to worry about that low note because it's there. But with this, you're just covering strings 5, 4, and 3, and you're leaving 6, 2, and 1 open. And so now I get this. It's a really big sound. I'm not playing in the key of D anymore. I'm capo 2 D, which after, what's the next shape right before that? So this would be the key of E. So capo 2, like this, is actually the key of E, but with D shapes. But you listen to the open sound. I'm leaving this top open because you can. And so to go here are your basic shapes. That's cool. But you can open this up because you have like now this drone right there. And so forget those basic ones unless you really want them. Common tone would be like, D over F sharp, G or 4 chord, A or 5 chord. I like my B minor like that. Instead of doing this, kind of grabbing just part of it. Happy to show you afterwards. So if I just played all the strings here, that's in the packet as well. But B minor, and those have more of that common tone. You can hear that ringing on the top. That's just really open. This somewhat emulates dadgad, which is good. Which is a great sound. So colorful, you can get this really beautiful. A normal straight A chord has an awesome sound. And there are chords even that you can move around. Like here's a really open one. Yeah, it doesn't get much easier than one finger. It has a little zone in the middle that you just sort of twiddle around on. And sort of mess around with. Play around with these, move around like this. And it has a really open sound. And these fit into these categories and are all in the packet for you too, so you can go back because you might not be able to write so quickly as I'm playing them. But just to give you an example of some of these, I love that chord, which is a voicing of a major 7. And I love this motion. And so I just took a bunch of hymns, and that's like a version that I'll do with like my Jesus I Love Thee or something. With my Jesus I love thee, I know thou art mine. And it just goes back and forth, and it reharmonizes it. And that's another thing you can do with these voicings. Change up the arrangement, and that can really freshen up. It really kind of sheds a different light on the words that you're presenting with the song you're doing. Nothing But the Blood, I did that a lot too with this.
Can wash away my sin. Nothing but the blood of Jesus. What can one another done?
Just that bass movement. It's really simple. A little bit more reflective.
No. Precious in the flow.
Finger picking.
That wakes me
up. It just has a nice kind of ring to it. And so you get creative. One of our tunes, not our tune, but our arrangement of Jesus on My Cross Have Taken. Let's see. I did this for, which is... Then for the next part, perish every with these open strings, you can move around like that. You know, and just, it's a really open, kind of fresh, I don't know, I like the sound of it. Let's see. Let's see if we can play this. Will this play? Yeah. Just finding things unique, because this is like, this should really be like caged cut capo. This is sort of like a trick you can do on D.
Jesus, I my cross have taken all to thee.
So you get that. Now, what's cool about this is that just like any of these that you can move around, like C can be capoed anywhere, so it can cut capo with two capos. And so, you know, if I want to play in the key of G, again, I'm putting these on the back of the metal. Otherwise, this cut capo, partial capo thing takes it way out of tune. But these have beautiful color voicings in them. They have great kind of power drone voicings in them, common tone voicings and things. And so, that's the key of G. And it just has a really big different sound.
What strings are you getting with the blue capo?
With the blue capo, I am hitting strings 5, 4, and 3.
Same as you were with the one.
Yeah, and I charted this out in the packet so that you could see, okay, here's normal cut capo down here. Here, if you wanted to move it around, now here's where you have to put those two capos. And you're basically creating the same relationship as you would down here. You wouldn't have to use the capo because the nut is taking care of that, but that's what you have to move around. And another one of our songs, and again, this is exactly, you're asking like how to use this stuff. I was thinking, one of our old songs, Eternal Praise, I don't know if you know that one, but Eternal Praise has this intro that Ryan, our bass player, made up, and I was like, okay, that's cool. How would I make that sound really good on guitar? And so I came up with this cut capo thing of... because I wanted it to have a big drone and I wanted to move around a bass note. And it's so, it's just getting to know the personalities of each of these chord families, including cut capo and dadgad, really. And then I give you a chart and you think, okay, which of the five ways can I do this would be the best for this song? Which would be the best for this part? You know, if you're doing recording stuff, which I mean, not many are, but you know, if you are, you just think through these, and maybe that's a bad example, but as you're thinking creatively of arrangement, this happens all the time. You know, I want to do this song. Usually we start off with it and it's really big, but I want to do like a really, really intimate kind of stripped down version of this song to bring out an aspect of the lyrics that's just really tender and beautiful. And so I want to rearrange it with more of that sound. And I don't want to use the normal chords that are, I want to capo up higher because I love this thing I can do in whatever key. Does that make sense? This takes some work. It takes some work. But if you work on understanding this, going through these voicings, go through the packet, find chords that you don't know, that you don't that you'd like. You know, you might find some you don't like. And just think which ones stick. And so you get to know the personality of these voicings. You can really be more creative, I think, in a way that just feels very authentic because you have a big vocabulary you're working with. Does that answer your question with the cut capo stuff? That's how I use it. And I have a sheet of voicings, and there are more that I'm sure that I haven't found, so it's a good start for you. So that's the cage thing, how that works going up and down the neck, and how that represents like a family of chords with different personalities. Question.
Where is the packet that you're talking about?
We were going to print it out at Worship God West, and we went to the FedEx Kinko's, and they said, okay, cool, it'll be $1,000. And so we figured, maybe there's a better way to do this. So yeah, it's on my website. There's one blog post. Again, just reiterate, I didn't even put my bio up there because we've been so busy this summer, and I just wanted to get this up for you guys so you could get it immediately, like even now if you want to look at it. And that and some other resources are on that one blog post. Just click on the links. Okay, so a couple other things with acoustic playing. Again, that's kind of the how you play sort of a stuff, but if you don't sound good while you're doing it, it doesn't matter. So just a couple other things. Dadgad is a retuning that I don't really want to do it right here, but I guess I could, for posterity. You're why is it called Dadgad? Because that's what the strings are tuned to. D, A, D, A, D, A, D, G, A, D. And so it's tuned to a D sus chord, if that matters at all. This has a really open sound. I don't know. You know, I think actually there are a bunch of other tunings like D-A-D-D-A-D, and I think that might have been it. Or you can do variations of this. Like I could tune this down to C, like everything down a half step, and that would be Dadgad in C sharp. Or I could tune it up to, I could do like the D-A-D-D-A-D thing in E. And David Crowder would do that a lot, and you'd hear like, you know, how does he doing that thing? And it's because it just gives you like a new neck and new voicings, you know. That just have new tricks and stuff on the guitar, and so that's worth checking out too. And I don't think that's in the packet, but I'll do a post on it for sure. But this first. But we can talk about Dadgad if you want to talk about Dadgad during the conference. Pop. Okay. Well, actually, yeah, I should have talked about that. Dadgad is very much committed to the key of D. Yeah. But if I capo 2, now it's an E. If I capo 3, it's an F. If I capo 5, it's in G. If I capo up here, it still works. Another Irish guitar player for a group called Solas, he would do that a lot. You'd see him capo 7 in Dadgad, but because you're tuning down, capoing up high doesn't really, you know, make it sound so high. But yeah, so now you just can memorize this stuff. I just know like where you would capo these for anywhere, and that just comes from playing these like every week for years, and thinking about it and communicating it to students. That's the best way, by the way, if you want to go home and find someone to teach it to, that's the best way to learn it. It's the best way to learn it. But yeah, I just know in Dadgad, I have D, capo 2 E, F, G, and the flats, A, and even B. And so I know those keys are available. Dadgad's more of a commitment because you've now sent your guitar to that land. So when we would use this for certain songs, that we had an Enfield, I would have two guitars. I'd have one tuned to Dadgad. And if you've got an old beater guitar, tune it to Dadgad and just leave it in the corner, and it's great. Okay, but yeah, you just that kind of goes back to this. So now, if I have caged, cut capo, and Dadgad, you have so many options for every single song. The better and better you get at this, and you can be so creative and just, you know, come up with ideas like that. And it's really a fun thing. You know, it's part of your tools as a musician. You know. Okay, so there was that with a little mention on Dadgad. There's more on open tunings. You could just make up your own, too, and find new chords in it. And that's part of the beauty of open tunings. It kind of gives you a fresh guitar. I mentioned the drone thing a little bit. You should check into other cultural styles, Irish music. They strum a little differently. They have jigs and reels and variations on those. And there are kind of different strumming senses there that will kind of be interesting for you. So you should check that out, or we should talk about them more. Just a couple things with acoustic playing. One, you don't always have to play. You know, I used to think, I remember, this is me, I am this person. I was thinking, okay, for this song, I'm just gonna like really get into it for the whole song. Or I would have students who, you know, who just, it's like you start the engine going and you just blast through the song. But they're great, you know, really shaping the song as an acoustic player. And again, what people tend to do in bands is just play rhythm all the time. And so it can be really nice if you don't even play for the first, like, you know, let's say they have, like on My Redeemer's Love, we'll use that song, pad, bass, and drums. And you come in on the, with picking or something, which I think they do on the recording. I don't know what picking, but. That's just a totally different texture, or just the simple guitar brush, I call it. You know, just a deeper than the rolling sea. Hi, and the rest of the band is playing. This is a really nice thing just to do, just that simple brush. So you're not having to just like go through the whole time. And to really think about where you want to play in the arrangement, because that can make your part that much more meaningful if you really wait for those moments. And that sounds like simple stuff, but I've seen lots of examples, and I've been that example of the person just plowing through the song. And even, you know, you just always have to be thinking about it. It's simple stuff, but it's easy to forget the simple stuff. Rushing is another huge thing that afflicts so many different players, not just in this style, but like every style. And I should have brought a metronome. Oh, you know, I do have a metronome. This is something you'll hear a lot. We were in the studio working on one of the albums, and our producer, working on some line, I can't remember, melody line or something, and he said, hey, just listen to this. I'm going to take what you just played, and I'm going to move it back with the beat, like, I don't know, 10 milliseconds or less or something like that. And he said, just listen to how it sits a little bit better, because what often we tend to do is, do I have some, can I get some iPad? Getting anything? Okay. No metronome. Why isn't that working? Let's try one more thing. Nope. Someone just clicked loudly or something. Okay. What often happens is we play right on top of the beat, like, and what that really is, we're thinking like we're locking into the time, especially if you grew up in piano lessons or something and you've been practicing scales to a metronome. But you end up being, if you look actually, if you record in GarageBand or Pro Tools or Logic or something, you'll see, like if you have the click of the metronome going on at the same time, you'll see how you're like right in front of the beat, anticipating it. And that tends to push things forward, especially, classic example is when guitar players tend to do something like that, they'll just start pushing and rushing. And it's the easiest thing to do. I listened to a recording of us playing at the church last week, and I thought, oh, that third service, I was rushing that part. And it's just easy to do in the moment. But what you should do is actually practice with a metronome. Metronomes are not for beginner players. But you should practice playing around the beat. So let's say you have this. Can you slow down and be playing a little bit behind where that click is? So it's like, it helps me to sort of think, and I wish I had a metronome. Oh, do you have a metronome? Okay. Yeah, where could we pick that up? Sweet. Improvising here. Okay. We have a metronome sitting by a microphone. Okay, so if I'm playing right on the beat, what if I relax a little bit? Hear that hitting like a split second? Let's slow down more. Now I'm way behind and it's gonna be way off, but there's a margin of milliseconds there which equals just kind of relaxing a little bit. That'll help you so much going from, and which really ends up anticipating that beat, to kind of just relaxing with that and remembering to do that. And it's just going to sit so much better with the band. I'll listen to the drummer and I'll just kind of, you know, sort of play with him and make sure that I'm locking in, not rushing. And what that really happens with your strumming a lot, especially if you're doing something like this. Those downs tend to kind of keep pushing and rushing, and it's so important to practice with the metronome. Sounds like the most easy thing in the world, but I've had studio players tell me that. Question? Yeah. How do I turn this off? Thanks. Yeah, and that, you know, probably at your church plant, you're not playing with a click. I tried it at our church plant for a little bit, but it was just too much work, and yeah. And we had such a shifting group that I thought, this is not what I should be worrying about right now. It can help, and it's not a beginner thing. Like, basically every pop group probably out there is playing with a click, especially the more kind of arranged ones. And it can just help for your timing. If nothing else, it can show you that maybe you don't have as good a time as you thought you had from experience. Yeah, and so plenty of times we're recording something and say, oh, that was great. Now just kind of lay back a little bit. But it, oftentimes you can solve that by just thinking about it and just remembering it and being aware of it. But you can actually practice it. You know, if you have GarageBand, put the metronome on and sort of strum along and see where your main downs are coming. You'll see a big spike. And you'll see oftentimes, if you're not careful, it's right in front of the beat and not just relax, just slightly after the beat. One other simple way is to, I got this from an amazing Ron Thal. He's the new guitarist for Guns N' Roses. He played his Bumblefoot too. He's just like one of these insane shredder guys. But he talked about his teacher early on setting a metronome to 40, which is really slow, playing a single note per click, and practicing playing behind that beat just a tiny bit. And that sounds a little hardcore, and it kind of is, but that's the stuff you have to do, you know, if you really want to think about it. So try it sometime. But just to be aware of that, because it's so easy, electric or acoustic, to really kind of push it and not to realize it. When the adrenaline's going, when the song is getting really big, when you're excited, you'll tend to rush from experience. A few little things. I want to talk a little bit about like a rig with acoustic for like sounds and stuff, and then quickly finger picking and one thing about strumming. You can have a lot of tone shaping in the way that you strum. A lot of beginners I have will hit like the bottom end really hard. And you know, I'm telling you, okay, you got to change this a little bit, but if you think of your beat as coming out more on the bottom of the strings, I mean, listen to how different this is. I'm just kind of shifting where the weight of my pick follows through on the strings. Hold your pick kind of lightly and think about just kind of gliding over the strings. And that can add like a lightness or a crispness to your strum. You might want to do a heavier kind of bottom end thing. What's that Mumford & Sons tune? That one, he does this cool open C tuning, and he's doing more of this kind of low, grabbing the high strings every once in a while. And so just be aware of like how you're strumming and the tone of your strum. It can be kind of clean high end. It could be a little grittier bottom end. I'm assuming you're not doing, you know, that. But that actually makes a big difference. And holding your pick lightly, the gauge of your pick, playing around with a lot of bluegrass players use really heavy picks, like extremely heavy picks. Like the heavy pick at the music store is a thin pick compared to what they'll use. I just grabbed this red one, just kind of a medium. For doing stuff where I'm pulling out lines, I like a little bit more firmness, so like I like the simple little Dunlop nylon ones, of which this is not one, but they're all gray or black, during varying kind of shades of gray. sometimes the light ones can be great, but I don't like to pick at all with the light ones, and so some of the mediums, like the 0.8 gauge or the 1.0, I like a lot for the Dunlops, just in giving kind of some firmness you can play around with, but that plays a lot with your tone too. I think for finger picking, that's something that you want to play with. And some of you might have no experience with that at all. You can start with some simple patterns of just going through a song, My Redeemer's Love, starting with the root of any chord and just picking up the strings like this. Now that sounds... If you've never done it before, this is a great way to get your fingers in shape because you're having to look for the root and hit that. Keep these fingers on the top. You can mix that pattern up. That doesn't sound so bad, but it's kind of basic, but that's a great place to stop. You can mix that up. And I have a sheet with some patterns for you to try. That's not in the packet, but I'll put it up on the website. Until you get comfortable, just kind of moving around. Some things to really think about that with finger picking are to have sustained notes as you go from chord to chord. If you let the string die as you lift up a finger, you know, that really cuts off the sound and kills the fluidity. Like, something like that. Just keeping your fingers down for sustain. Or using an open string to cover up if you have a hard chord change. Like, so I'll use like this open G on the G chord. And those open strings really cover your movement, especially if you had to like move around. That can be really good. That's just the tiniest little bit of finger picking. But really with acoustic playing, your open chord families, a little bit of the capo tricks, maybe some open tunings, finger picking or strumming, and you're going to have a whole lot you can do. That's really like the beauty of the sound of an acoustic. I love as one kind of final thing with acoustic playing, and a lot of this transfers over into electric playing too. That's right here. I love to run through this little LR Bags DI. Comes with a nice little carrying case. This is called the Venue DI, and you can use like the DI that's right here. And it sounds okay, right? There's nothing wrong with it. This came up for like with the conferences that we were doing. If you ever have a guitar solo or something like that, and we'll cover kind of soloing stuff on the electric side of scales, you often had to like ask the sound guy to remember to boost you, which didn't always happen, or they didn't know your songs very well. Tuning issues or switching guitars, ever do that? This has a fantastic little mute tuner on it. It's really bright. It has a boost for you. That's you can move from like 0 to 9 dB. Has an effects return. To an acoustic, you don't want to send your guitar through a pedal board and stuff because it's not doing great things for the pure acoustic sound. But you can put some effects back here with like a little bit of reverb or delay if you ever use that. It's nice for solos. Without, you know, sending your guitar through that signal all the time, you know, you can look into what that really means if that's new to you. It has a fantastic little tone shaping thing up here with an EQ, some notch filters for like feedback and stuff. This is really great for even mediocre guitars. I have this kind of cheapy Washburn back at home that just has an old LR Bags M1 pickup in it. I use that, and it sounds surprisingly usable. It's a really great sound. That a DI like that can be really helpful for like boosting yourself when you're finger picking, to tuning, you know, and kind of, you know, cutting it out. You might use a tuning pedal or something like that. I kind of wrote in this outline, you know, for an acoustic rig, do you need one? Not really. But a DI can be nice. It's nice to have a little bit of like reverb in a solo or something. And, you know, for soloing, we'll talk about this more with electric and stuff and the scales and another aspect of caged. But you don't have to do fancy things, you know. Could you strum on like a G chord or something? You don't even have to know any scale shapes for this. L.R.Bags, B-A-G-G-S, LR Bags. They make great pickups and DIs and things like that. It's a Venue DI. I really like it a lot. So just strum on G. G, C, G, C. If I just know that I can go, that might be all you need. You know, you don't need to be moving around, but just like simple, keep playing. Hardly moving at all, just playing a couple notes, and that goes into stuff that crosses over in electric. Thanks. With, let's say you know two notes that sound good in the key of G. A little bit of vibrato, like a vocal thing, just by pulling the string a little bit. You can use a metronome and practice your vibrato. Really important. Famous people will tell you to do this. You kind of pull the string a little bit. You can do it one per beat to gain control. Then move to two. Move to three. One, two, three. One, two, three. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. And obviously, well, you know, like, there are different singing styles. And when you are listening to something operatic, you want to hear that vibrato and that strong voice. But, you know, if we were doing, a really stripped down version of like, It Is Well With My Soul or something. In peace, like, you know, you can have in mind how you might sing that, but if you had, you know, in peace, like, you know, it would be a little bit out of character for this. But, so you don't want to have like crazy vibrato, like, you know, unmusical vibrato. Play a note, and then just shake it a little bit. That helps you be in tune. Actually, that's kind of a big thing. It helps you be in tune a little bit. When I do that on electric, I like to do that on electric just naturally to keep it kind of in tune, especially up high. But that can be a nice thing just to have a little slide from one note to another. And again, I'm trying to go from basic to more advanced. So a hammer-on, a pull-off. Those can, with just two notes, can really make you sound pretty decent as an acoustic player. And you can say a whole lot more than that. So we'll talk about that when we get into the cage, kind of moving around. So that's what I like to use for kind of acoustic kind of a rig, just that DI. If I want to plug like some simple delay or something, that can be helpful, but totally not necessary. So this is kind of, I kind of want to transition into electric stuff now. A lot of this crosses over into it. And as a guy, if you just play acoustic, you can think about, you know, moving a lot of this stuff to electric playing and how this applies to acoustic, back to acoustic playing as well. So it's cool. If you have any questions, you can come up. Yeah, let's take a 5-minute break.
I almost always play my A as A2.
Yeah, like playing a chord like an A2 when it's not in the chart as an A2. And really, with that stuff, half the time, if it's on the chart, I don't play it because I didn't want to do a 2 there. And most of the time, if it's not there, I will add some color like that because I want to. And so when you get a chord chart like that, it's just a suggestion. And that's like a blank canvas of how you might want to interpret G, C, D. You might want to do G major 7, oops, G major 7 to C add 2, maybe not that voicing, or E minor 9, why does it sound so weird, and E minor 9 when it's just written as an E minor, because that's, you know, that really goes with the song. And that just comes down to knowing like what you can add, but it's okay. It's okay if you see just a C to make it a C2, or if you see a C2, say, nah, let's just do it like this. But with pop playing in general, oftentimes people are playing twos and stuff like that because it has a more modern kind of open sound, like wildly out of tune.
But isn't kind of what your question, like your musicians aren't, you're playing the two, the keyboard player isn't.
Is that an indication that you're kind of playing the same?
Well,
playing on top of each other?
Not necessarily. A lot of keyboard players, if they're coming from more of a classical background, will play like full big chords. Instead of playing these more open chords, leaving out, it's kind of a modern sound to leave out the third and just play the two, because it's more kind of open. It really, well, if you have, here's a theory moment too, if you have 1-3-5 as a chord and you substitute it for 1-2-5, that 2-5, 2-3-4-5 is a fourth, which is that powerful kind of blends with everything sound. So back to not theory, you know, it just has a really good kind of blending sound. It's a really modern sound to do that two sound. And so, you know, a piano player might be trained well enough to realize, oh, he's playing a two and I'm not. But maybe they should be playing a two. So you have to think, that's a whole other issue of how do I graciously communicate to my players in a way that does not, like, leave them discouraged and make them want to never play again. And that's, like, the great kind of shepherding aspect of talking about the sounds that you want to use and engaging. Like, oh yeah, let's try it. Let's try it with the two or not with the two. Why don't we on this because it's more open and I like the sense that it gives. You know, I would, so that's what comes to my mind from being involved in situations like that before. I remember one time a piano player telling me, oh, you're playing, there's like no third in that chord. Like it was this chord or something. And that was strange for her, which she was used to playing from hymn books and stuff. And so then you have like every chord on every beat and stuff and voice leading and things like that. And so this chord sounded strange, like these. And so, you know, you'll get kind of sensibilities like that. But the two is kind of a modern sound. Some people might say it's like overplayed. Maybe truth to that, but it's a really valuable kind of open sound. So this is a really cool low wattage amp, which means that it will also be loud in your faces if I don't keep it barely on. Okay, now I'm not going to say anything. That was probably a millimeter of difference from one to the other. So. Okay. That's pretty good. Okay. Is everyone back? Kind of looks like everyone's back. Mostly. Okay, with electric, it is, you kind of, sometimes you'll get a person, and maybe this is you, coming to electric from acoustic, and you're like, sweet, I really wanted to play electric. And, you know, here comes the song, and you're like, you know, just strumming on that, and it's like, everyone is like, ugh, it's so loud. Or the voicings, yeah, you just have a different, you can use an electric like an acoustic. I'm careful with the tone that's coming out of it. You know, I play with the pickups and stuff, really, and you can't really. I don't dig in as hard for sure because it can really sound not acoustic, and this actually works well. You listen to if you're going to the concert tonight. Their version of Grace and Peace. Have you heard it, Jordan, off the album? Yeah, it starts with electric as like the sort of acoustic thing. And so check that out, because you can use it. You can use it like that. If you're sensitive kind of with, again, with your pick, there's so much tone that comes out of how you strum, how you hold the pick, how hard you dig into the strings, what kind of, if you're kind of digging into the middle, if you're scooping on the end, if you're kind of more brushing towards the bottom of the strings like that. So you can sort of use it like that. We didn't talk about any strumming patterns with acoustic, but I'll put some stuff on the website, or we can talk about that. I'll try to save some time at the end for questions. But again, feel free to speak up in the middle of this. Okay, so I think you can sort of think of electric as kind of like a super acoustic, sort of, in some ways, because your open voicings can work really well on acoustic, and I'll mention some things about that, because I really like to use some open voicings. It tends to have more sustain. It tends to have more power, sort of goes without saying. More power, and just kind of punches out. Like high stuff will sort of stick out more, sustain more and stuff. You can use all the effects and things, although some acoustic players do use effects. And so I sort of think of it as a kind of a super acoustic in a way, but it allows you to really get up through the neck. And this is where, you know, you'll have a good guitarist with good sensibilities, you know, serving with you. And, you know, I've had people like this before where it's like, oh, you have really good ideas and you come up with some good stuff. And now let's do something. This is in B flat, so could you do like a high sort of B flat and maybe play around with that? And they're like, okay. Okay. Oops, you know, sort of moving around one string, sort of trying to find their way around there. Let's sort of fold into this caged idea. We don't have obviously time. We won't spend as much time as we did on it before, but this caged idea can help you a lot on electric, because this is one of the ways that scales really work. And as you get to know that caged sequence, C, A, G, E, and D, that can really help you out, because there are scale shapes that are associated and predictable with each of those. Like you have the C shape, the A shape, the G shape, the E shape, and the D shape. And as they're you know, not just like a box of dots, you know, as you're going across the neck, but they look like a C chord. That can really help you out a lot. And so in the key of C, I have this shape right here. I I can sort of play it over the C chord a little bit. But that is like the C-shaped scale. And then you have the A-shaped scale. And it actually fits over that shape. And this is laid out on the website. I put a couple scale charts there with these cage shapes labeled so you can see them, with the roots kind of in a lighter color, and then the whole neck on the side so you can see kind of how it works through the neck. There's the G shape. What's next? E shape? D shape. And then it starts over at the C shape. Now, I'm not showing you that, being thinking in my mind, there, you know it now. But just to demonstrate the concept so that you can go and start to take this, or we can dialogue more in some of the other sessions or outside of the sessions about this. Does that make sense that, and this is, you know, if you don't play electric, this can help you a lot on acoustic too. But especially with electric, as you're able to get out of open position and really have it, you know, speak, this is one way of really getting to know your scales. And so if we have like the key of B flat or something, well, you have to think, what is the lowest caged shape that would be a B flat? And would some of you maybe know where to put a B flat bar chord? Right here? Yeah. Some of you know. I can play a B flat bar chord. Right here on the first fret. Now, what does that kind of look to you, like to you? Does that look like any chord that you just go three across? It looks like that A shape. So you know that's the A shape. So bam, you nailed where that is. And again, this is written out for you too, because it takes a little bit more than just watching someone and hearing him talk about it. But hopefully the concept and the ideas and ways to practice are explained clearly. So what's after the A shape in this? The G. So it'd be the G shape. But now it's moved, so it's in the key of B flat. Then E, then D, then C, and then back to B flat again, and then G. And so it just goes through the neck like that. Now, I can give you even harder ways to practice this too if you really like want to be gung-ho about it. Okay, so you can see how if I know I'm playing in the key of G, or key of B flat, and I know my caged chord sequence, like how that flows throughout the neck, I can know that, oh, here's that D shape. It'll always look like that shape. So you learn the D shape, and it's really easy to move around. And these also, you can move them around by root, but all of these ideas tend to flow together. You could just learn like kind of where they are by the root and think, okay, that D shape has the root always right there. So if you play a little bass and you know where the notes are on the sixth string, you say, okay, here's the note G, so I'm just going to play that shape. And that will work for you, but you can start associating it with the D shape, and the C shape is right there, and you start associating the shapes there. And this can really help you throughout, you know, understanding the neck, which we talked about a lot for the acoustic time. So questions on that? The concept, this is written out for you. There's a good book, the Fretboard Logic books, you know, are pretty good with this. They're like really hardcore caged. But do you get how this applies to scales too? And that sequence as it moves through the neck? Again, this is something that you have to practice. So seriously, if anyone's like, no, but I'm shaking my head yes. Do you have any questions on this? Do you want to flesh it out a little bit more?
Yeah, help me out with this. Yeah. As far as like how I'm playing a D chord, now all of a sudden that's a D scale.
Sure. Okay. Let me write one out on the board. He was asking how you go from like taking a chord shape and like how does the scale shape fit over that, basically?
Like, are you playing the full scale or is it like a pentatonic scale?
No, this is the diatonic one. There are the pentatonics that work with that too. Diatonic, fancy theory word, that means just all the notes in the key, all the natural notes in the key. So C diatonic would be, here's one, something like that. C pentatonic, pent meaning five, it's a five note scale. It leaves out certain notes. We don't have to talk, we can talk theory later about that, but that's the pentatonic. But that still fits over, like that happened to be like that G shape, that G zone. And so there's a scale, you know, maybe you can see if probably 80% of the people in this room have played that scale before. Yeah, that G shape is kind of like the shape that lots of guitar players know. And it happens to fit over like where a G chord would be for whatever key you're playing in. So wherever that G chord, that G, not chord, but that G shape would be throughout the neck, that scale shape fits right over it. So for this simple pentatonic one, which is again laid out for you, I don't think it would be as helpful for me to walk through like this fret, this fret, this fret, because you probably wouldn't remember that right now, but can you see how that sort of fits over like what a G shape looks like? And that's why this is useful. And this is like what we talk about in a semester. So, but again, you can reference back to this. You can look stuff up online. You can talk to me via the website and stuff. Let me just chart out one for you, like an easy one that makes sense. Let's do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, let's do, just add one more fret there. So what I'm doing now is drawing a C-shaped scale. D, C, B, A, G. I can do this because this is the stuff I dream about. Okay. So that's a C-shaped scale. You're like, what? Convince me it's a C-shaped scale. Okay. You can sort of start to pull out. Like, here's a root and here's a root. Can you see that right there? As like this C shape that you might be used to playing, that is embedded in all the scale shapes. And what I'm doing now, another way to describe it would be I'm just playing all the notes that happen in the key around that shape. But these shapes, these are, I can't tell you how useful chord shapes are for your soloing. You can think let's do this. Okay, if I know where some of my chord shapes is, and this is an application thing, we're not there yet necessarily in terms of explaining it, but I can, in the key of G, just know, here's my D shape. You know, I can use that melodically. Like, I could do this, but I could also pick it apart, and now it sounds like a melody. But I'm just using it as kind of a map for what notes sound good. And that's where getting to know these chord shapes throughout the neck can help you so much. If you can just, I've had students, and you will just be like this. Like, you have vocabulary that you tend to use. You'll have shapes that you just, for some reason, can always find the G shape as it moves across around the neck. And you'll just know where that is. So you can expand that more and more by learning this stuff. Now, again, this is, I'm going to try to, like, start from a basic level and build it. So there should be, you know, if you're feeling like, I loved your question. That was fantastic. Does that help with that? And that works for all of them. Like, I don't know if you want to watch me draw an A shape right now, but let's lose it, like with the G shape down here. You see that? Sorry for the excessive delay. Or it's all the notes that sort of fill in the gaps around a chord, if that makes sense. Now, this does take practice. You know, don't walk out of here thinking you didn't give me what I needed, or that I think that this is all you need to understand and go like do this tomorrow on stage or something. These are the concepts that come out of this big caged idea that we're talking about. There are a lot of resources with Fretboard Logic, with the stuff I have on the website, the resources there. I'm happy to like sit with you for, grab me, we'll talk for hours on this, and you can bring your guitar and we'll practice it and I'll give you a lesson. But that's kind of how that works. And each of these cage shapes not only are chord shapes, but they're also like patterns for scales too. And as you learn that cage sequence throughout the neck, you are going to start, you're going to be able to kind of superimpose the scale over that zone of the neck. So it's like for the C shape, you're playing the scales that just surround that C chord. For the A shape, now you're playing in that part of the neck, all the ones that surround that. Is that maybe another way to describe it? Around the G shape, now you're grabbing all the notes that surround that where that G shape would be. For the E shape, all the notes. For the D shape, all the notes that are in that zone. And so that's kind of how that works. And you may think, I'm not really a solo player, or I don't need to do lines, but maybe like one of these. Like I said, if you know two notes in the key and you can do this, you know, let's do this. That could be nice and all you need. You know, you don't need to, you know, start tapping or something like that, or playing as fast as you possibly can. And don't guitar players, we kind of have the tendency to noodle a little bit, you know, and that kind of goes to like a soloing thing. All the recordings and the songs you listen to have memorable parts to them. You know, it's not like this stream of consciousness. I'm sort of, you know, could whistle that back? You know, it doesn't make any sense, but... That's easier, or something even simpler than that. You know, that's really simple. It's around a D shape, or it's just finding a couple... If this scale stuff is a little too, like, whoa for you, just find a couple notes that work somewhere through the neck and try to remember them for the key, because it sounds bad if you're not on those. But you can write that down. but yeah, does that make sense? How these scales, or sorry, these caged forms, this caged sequence as it moves through the neck, really represents zones of notes that work for you too, which is actually what a scale is. So let me give you. Give you a simpler yet harder way to practice some scales, and I guarantee you this will open the neck for you like nobody's business. So this I got from a jazz guy. He called it the three-point approach, and the jazz guy is this guy named Sean McGowan, McGowan, M-C-G-O-W-A-N, which is phenomenal guitar player. I've studied with him a bunch. He's just kind of like a blow-your-mind guitar player, and just... You check out his stuff just to listen to, because it's really just cool. He does a lot of fingerstyle acoustic stuff, like on jazz, which is sweet, as well as tearing it up on electric. So, Sean McGowan, McGowan. And you can just, he's out of the University of Denver. He's like the guitar guy there. But really phenomenal. He called this a three-point approach. And it's three ways to approaching the guitar neck. Because even, you know, with this caged idea, we could take that. And that can be chunks of the neck. And have you ever felt like, if you do know a couple scale shapes, that you're sort of stuck in the Bach? Like, I know that one, but I'm afraid to move on, you know, because it gets dangerous from there on out. And guitars tend to have, like, sort of like a fear of heights. This is scary up here. These frets are really shiny and untouched. And so the ones high up on the neck, really with... You can just think from the 12th fret on, this is just a tiny guitar neck right here. There's the first fret again, second fret, third fret, you know, instead of the great unknown. But he talked about this three-point approach, and he broke it up into three ways, two of them which we can talk about, one which we already have. Let's do this. This is our C pad. This is the little freeze pedal. Electroharmonics makes a lot of crazy, interesting stuff, and this just stops whatever you're playing and holds it forever. So yeah, I like to do it to play around with some sort of like pad ideas with it. I can send it through some reverb, record it, drop it down an octave. About ambient playing too, because this is one of the most fun things to do on the guitar. And so, anyways. Okay, let's turn that off. So, here's our C scale. And I guarantee you, just like exercising, this is not always fun, but this is actually really easy. I want you to start on the lowest note possible in the key of C. And I tell a student to do that, and they're like, okay. No, the lowest note, just in the key, because really, with these chords, with these scales and stuff, I want this entire neck to be a C chord for you. At any moment when you have to think, I want to do an arrangement of the song, or I need a part for this song, where do you want it? Anywhere as accessible as like a C chord or a C scale. They're all over the place. You know, they're just everywhere. And so I want it to really be accessible for you. So we're going to start on the lowest note possible, sixth string E. That's an E, right? And a lot of guitar players don't know the notes on the guitar neck, and it really hinders you. Just like, it's like learning a language. Yeah, it's hard. You got to learn the verbs and stuff like that. It's harder if you're older. You know, you didn't grow up as a baby speaking two languages or something. once you get past that and it starts to sink in, and this just takes time that a lot of people don't put in because it's discouraging, but that's just a practice thing. Consistency over time. You don't gotta have to work for an hour on it a day, a half an hour. You work on it for 5 minutes a day. 2 minutes a day is better than no minutes a day. 2 minutes three times a week, you know, is better than no minutes three times a week, which is probably what I did last week. But okay, start on the lowest note. And I'm gonna do this. I had a friend who has suffered a traumatic brain injury and really didn't think he was gonna recover. The soundtrack for this. and he's like a case study where he was at now because he recovered, but he has no sense of taste and some issues with short-term memory, but he survived. He has a family, he has a job and all this stuff. But he talked to me about ways of remembering things because he has those issues. And he talked about like when you meet somebody's name and you immediately forget it. Is it Greg? Yeah, sweet. Okay, I'm getting better. You know, it's repeating that and like visualizing something, repeating it, saying it over and over can really help you remember something. And so I'm doing this, and I literally mean to do this. Start on the low E, and you're going to go up the string to like the 12th fret. So E, then I'm looking at the fretboard. Here's my F. I'm looking at it. I'm seeing it. I'm saying it. That's a G, A, B, C, D, E. So far, so good. Hop over the 12th fret on the A and go down. A, what's next? G, it's hard to do the alphabet backwards. E, D, C, B, A, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, E. Saying the notes. Don't just use your ear. That's cheating. But saying like G, F, E, D. Look at it. See where it's on the dots. C, B, A, G, B, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, E, D, C, B, A, G, F, E. And then you can go back up the opposite way and you'll go, you know, you'll do backwards what you just did. Does that make sense? It's pretty easy, right? And you might be thinking, C, no problem. Which was the case when I did it, when I was being taught it, and said, okay, so now go up C, G, A, B, C, D, E, and down A flat. You know, and then up E flat. So you can really make it hard. But that applies to almost anything you want to practice. Let's take this idea, and this is really useful for electric playing. And you can integrate this into like kind of soloing a little bit and say you have this going, inspiring, you know. And you just want to kind of move around just on one string as if your guitar has one string. And just think about the phrasing ideas you're going to have. This is different than more sliding and stuff, bigger shifts automatically. Which would be, you wouldn't really think that way doing this. You know, it just doesn't come out. It's more picky within the box. But going up and down, you're doing naturally more slides. Like that on one string. And as you get to notes, I cannot tell you how important this is. I know there's someone in here thinking, that's like lame. That's easy, you know, it's not hard. But you can even put on a metronome to force yourself to go faster and say the notes, see the notes, especially when you're going backwards. Pick a different key, pick D, pick, you know, F, pick whatever you need to. That is going to open up the neck for you so much, you know, so where you don't really have to. You just see notes everywhere. And you're not like, okay. Good, good, good. You know, sliding around and sort of hoping for the best. But this is a way to practice scales, which is phenomenal. The other way would be do it, you can think of this, I don't know, if you think of this as like vertical up and down or back and forth physically, whatever. That's one way. The other way would be like this, which is sort of the cage system, more the boxes, but saying the notes as you go across the neck. So E, F, E, F, G, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Slide up. Now go back the chunk of the neck around the third and fifth fret. Then you slide up, go right here, slide up, go back this way, forcing yourself to say the notes and to see the notes. And you'll know if you're cheating. But I guarantee you, write me for your money back. No, I'm kidding. Because I know it'll work. I'm that confident. I'll give you a free guitar lesson if it doesn't. if you can do at least up and down the strings, I'm telling you, you will start to see notes all over the place. You can do that with chords. like, how would you, like, a C chord, could you spell a C chord? C, E, G. You can practice chords like this, too. And it will make you think of them differently. Let's start on the lowest note possible in a C chord, on the first string, which is what? Yeah, E. E, G, C, E, G, C. Second string. C, E, G, C, E. And you will start to see things pretty differently. Now let's say we'll do it over two strings. That was the second. Oops. You'll start to see patterns that arise from not just, and you can go back to the scales like that too and start thinking not just single string, but what if you like snapped all the strings off your guitar except for two? You could come up with scale patterns that move up and down, like, and there are patterns that happen that way just like there are patterns like that. So it's really interesting. You can push yourself as hard as you want to with this, and really be thinking. You know, that was just on two strings, and you become really fluid in moving around. So that's two of the three ways. The third way you can talk to me about afterwards. It's a symmetrical thing, which, you know, this is, I don't want to talk all about scales. But does that make sense? These two approaches, up and down the strings, back and forth. I guarantee you it will challenge you, and you will start to see the neck. You do this for like a month and tell me if it doesn't help you see the neck a whole lot more fluidly. You can do it with pentatonic scales. And it will help you see that differently. And there are patterns. There are patterns that just go up the neck, which will give you new ideas for phrasing and stuff, will cure your fear of heights because you can just kind of see these things. So that's, again, kind of folding into the caged idea, how scales work with that, but then kind of going beyond that into kind of a saturated way through the neck, so that this entire fretboard is a C chord for you, or a B chord, or F scale, the whole thing, not just one chunk that you have memorized, but the whole thing. Questions on that? How would I apply it? How would I practice it? Whatever, I don't get it. Yeah?
Just like, are there, as far as when you're practicing things, do you like just go through it back and forth over and over again, or do you like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, something like that?
Both. Sometimes I'll come up with like structured patterns that I can sort of work up and down the strings or even back and forth, you know. Groups of fives, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Stuff like that, just to help you get to know the shapes better. But it's sort of whatever your creative mind comes to engage yourself in. Because you will practice more when it's interesting to you. Knowing you're supposed to eat your vegetables, you got to do it. But if you put some cheese on them, it's still maybe a little nicer. But you can find like I'll recommend some sites. But there's this guy Carl Verkade. I don't know if you know who that is. Verkade. He's got this great site called Guitar for Worship or Worship for Guitar or one of those. And he is this kind of monster ambient player. Really, really great ideas. He will go in detail. He's owned like every piece of gear ever. He's married. I don't know how he does it. That I want to know. But he's just really into ambient playing and has some really great ideas on that. And so he lists it out in his blog. It's really, really good for that. But on his Bandcamp site, which he lists to, he'll often give these away for free, but they're very inexpensive. And you can listen to the demos in full on Bandcamp too. But he'll just do these like 8-minute demos or 8-minute like C pads. In every key, like C, F, B flat, A flat. So you can have pads in every key, which he says, you know, they're useful for you to use just on Sunday mornings if you want to use that. You know, cue it, fade it in and out. But I'll put that on and I'll just start going for it on a scale. Just, you know, it's something like that, except maybe a little bit more interesting. It's sort of kind of going in and out of C and stuff. And that's just, you know, a little bit more motivating than just doing this in your own bedroom. with nothing else sort of frames the notes a little bit better. But yeah, so there's that. But I find it's really useful as a practice thing to just think, I've got no agenda, I'm just going to explore. And you'll find stuff. You'll find stuff. Really, your improv, this comes from a lot of really great players. This sort of shattered the myth for me that these great, you know, improvisers and stuff, they just do it. They're just magical. You know, they're like these magical beasts that just come up with incredible solos out of thin air. And I've had so many people, and this is true. This is true for me, and it's true from a lot of great players that I got this from. 70% of what you do is already made up. And maybe there's like 30% that you're going to improvise, but you sort of have like a, you know, when you talk, we're improvising like crazy right now, we're talking and stuff, and but that's about, I'm using words that I've said before in situations and things like that, and you become better at it the more you do it. You know, it's good just to kind of, just to give yourself sort of like the freedom to kind of explore with that and come up with stuff. So that's really important to kind of think through that. And to let yourself be challenged that way instead of always just practicing the scale the same way and stuff. So anyways, some things. Cage is obviously very useful, you know, just because it helps you get to understand the neck. let's talk. I don't want to talk all just like chords and resources, but maybe some application and stuff too. Some other things that are like really essential, I think, for electric playing are these idea of triads. And these are listed out really clearly in the packet. There's even the triad packet just by itself listed on the website. Has anyone gone there yet? Checked it out? Okay, you should see it there in the only blog post that is on the blog. So, this idea of a triad is just the chord at its most basic bit. When you're playing a C chord like this, you're playing a lot of C chords. It's like if you, does anyone not play piano even just the tiniest little bit? Can you make like a C chord on the piano? Yeah, most people can. If you can't, I'll show you. But it would be like multiple hands playing that same C chord. And that's what we do on the guitar. We have multiple versions of those chords. We just see that as a C. But you can get in a little deeper and think about what are just the three notes. And thankfully, you don't have to think about the three notes that much. You can just look at the patterns, and these are all listed out. You can think about the notes if you want to go further. But here's C. Here's the next version of them. You might hear the word inversions at some point. That's just mixing up the notes, and that's what they're called. But these are C chords. You know how sometimes you have like a D or a D over F sharp? That's kind of what these are, different roots. A C with an E in the lowest note. A C with a G in the lowest note. But they're just shapes. Now, a caged thing, and you can listen back and think about this, the first one, root position, is part of the A shape. This one up here, it's part of the, like, the top of the E shape, if that helps you. This other one is the top of the D shape. But this helps you immediately come up. That's not very interesting. Let's do. Automatically, you can take some of these shapes. I just parked myself up higher on the neck. So that would be playing over someone if you're like, I only know low chords or power chords on the electric. These can be a lot brighter, a lot higher up on the neck. If I just play that one chord for the whole time, it sounds good over almost every single chord in a song. And what you're trying to do, this is an application thing, is to not just play the chords off the chart. I think it's your dad who said something about, you know, play a part, not the chart, or something in a rehearsal once. I can't forget it. But you're trying to come up with something musical, a part, not just like, here's the right chord, here's the next right chord, here's the next right chord. And you'll hear this in so many different recordings. Thinking of like the beginning of How Great You Are, if you know that. How's it go now? Dun, 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 dun. I just played it. I can't remember. Dun, dun. There we go. Yeah. Okay. I'm butchering the song in front of you all. But yeah, it starts off with this high part. While this lower part is just doing. Two very distinct little parts. And it's like you're not just playing the right chord at the right moment, but you're using that as your vocabulary to say something. And that's a hard thing to do, is start from, okay, I just learned this chord, now I'm just putting it at the right place. That's like step one. That's the first thing you have to do. That's important. But when you're coming up with any of these chords, you could just take like these caged ideas at first and say, okay, and see, I know that there's a G shape right here. I'm just gonna play the top of it. Or I know the D shape right here, or even the C shape up here. You could come up with the simplest of ideas like that. Just move a finger around if it sounds good, but these triads are really important, and they're on the first three strings, and they're on the second three strings, and there are three shapes for each, and these are listed out in the packet. There are great ways to practice these. One, you could just pick one shape. Let's pick a D shape since everyone knows it. And you find where the root is, which is clearly labeled in the packet. It's right here in the middle. So if you know, if you're starting to learn like the notes around the neck, you can say, okay, right now that's a D because that's on the note D. Well, if I'm playing this song and I'm reading deeper than the Rolling C's, F, okay, where's an F? And then here's an F right there. So I'm gonna plant that. Deeper than the Rolling C's. Where's a C? Right here, because there's a C. There's the minor version of these two, which is in the packet. Just, you can learn it. If you know a little bit about theory, you can take the third and lower it. So yeah. And then the, what's the next chord? Probably a G. No. Yeah, G, which would be right here. Your love is all I need. And if you just take one chord and that's your only chord for the entire song, this isn't necessarily how you want to play on Sunday morning, but for practice, for reading through a chart, you're going to learn that chord really well through a couple songs. You just start remembering it and you start to see it. You can practice, I mean, think of how many how many guitar charts, how many, you know, worship charts you have stuffed in the back of your guitar case. Just take those out and that's like your practice. Or that you have in a file somewhere since you're worship leaders and stuff. Does that make sense? Do you feel like you could take one of these and like look at the packet, take a shape and start to move it around? Grab me during the conference and we'll have a little practice session right there too. These triads you'll hear pop up a lot in like, does anyone recognize, those are those chords. And you can make them melodic so they sound like a part, not just that kind of a thing. Or like, what's the other one? Those are just these tiny little chords. And as you learn to see them, you know, one way would be practicing just moving one around so you get that one shape. But there are three of them per string. They move on to the others, but I think those really, the first and second string sets are the useful ones. I can give you ways that will kind of blow your mind, and you can check out on the website. I'll put those up, but if you want to know towards the end, I'll tell you too. Cycle four thing, it's really, really useful. But I could take this progression right here, A, D, E, or whatever, and I could play. Where do I play D? Or I could go like this. Or, there are a lot of other variations of all those chord shapes, and those are just combining those little chord shapes. Now that's work, but I guarantee those are going to be so useful for you. And you could start with just picking one and say, I'm just going to work on this one for the next 2 months. And you'll get that one down. You know, if you want to go faster, you can go faster. But the idea is you're taking some ideas out of all the things we're talking about and just grabbing this and this, just constantly improving yourself, because that's just is developing your musical language, your vocabulary. You can be more creative, you know, just arranging, thinking musically for the glory of God, more excellently. and all that way. So are there any questions on the triads and stuff? They're really useful. Really, really useful. I played a Hillsong examples. What more do you need? Yeah, they're really useful. I worked quite a bit with, Will sort of took my spot as I moved away from California, from Enfield and stuff. Will Pierce, and he was one of my students before, and we worked a lot on this stuff, and just getting to know the next, so that's where this whole thing could be a C chord for you, like this, or you, all these chords all over the place. They're all C chords, and you can play high, low, middle strings, because these, you know, are a little bit warmer sounding. Same chord, so that's really useful. Let me mention just a tiny bit about power chords. You know, you probably know these. If you don't, they're not hard to learn. This is detailed in the chord packet. But to give you something, even on acoustic playing, which is really useful, is power chords up the neck, especially in like non-3-note versions of them. Like, let me give you, let's start off like with just learn these shapes. 2-note little power chord shapes, right here and here. I can't tell you how much I use these for, from like ambient playing to solo ideas to another guitar part up high that's driving and stuff. These can be awesome for acoustic too, because again, your chord shapes, as you learn them throughout the neck, become like the safe place to play notes. So I could take this chord, and like I said earlier, I could break it up. And now it sounds like a melody, but I'm almost just outlining that D chord shape. So your chords are kind of like the outlines for where, it's kind of like a roadmap for a safe place to play notes. where was I going with that? Oh yeah, these little power chord shapes. Power chords are fifths and fourths and stuff like that, and they sound the way they do because they leave out the third. So you get like this sound, whereas I have the third in there. More complex sounding. The intervals that make up a power chord are just really clean and kind of pure sounding. but the small ones up on like the higher strings, and let me give you these on the second two strings. And you can go refer to the packet or talk to me about it, and I'll talk about more of them. But you can take just these two. Here's one, and you can know where it is because there's a G right there, and that's how you can move it around. And you can practice it by just taking that one shape and making it every single chord. And it can be every single chord because it doesn't have a third in it. So I could take, you know, deeper than the rolling seas, higher than the mountain peaks, just because I'm putting that root note, which is the open circle in the chart, over the chord. And so that's how you learn where they are. But these two chords, let's say I'm doing something like this. Oops, sorry, wrong setting. Change my delay stuff. Let's do that. Oops. Sorry. Okay, here we go. Blue. Okay. Let's take this one chord shape right here. I can layer that. I just want a higher part. When you have multiple electrics, it's useful to not be playing like the exact same thing or the higher version of it. You can, a great way to do this, even if you don't know the notes around the neck, is to, without moving, because it's good to kind of hang on that shape, you can grab the notes around it and use it melodically too. So, and just kind of make them melodic as well. These are also some of my favorite voicings to use for like ambient stuff. And let's talk a little bit about that because that's so useful. So who plays electric here? Okay. This can be really useful for acoustic playing. So listen to this. With you can just take your volume, and a lot of people use a volume pedal for this. I tend to use my volume knob. You could use your little volume on the acoustic, but I've seen acoustic players use a volume pedal for this too, and just take and do like just raise the volume into the note. But once I get away from that, it just dies. So a way to add some like sustain to that note, you can do it two ways. Here's the way that I do it. I use a reverb pedal. This doesn't work with all reverb pedals, but this is what it sounds like just normally, you know, kind of loud and echoey. But if I do this, you know, now I can move around. Just using those two shapes. Does that make sense? And what that does is it gets rid of my attack, so it's not annoying. And I just feed that sound into this long long reverb trail, and it catches that and sustains it out for a long time. And that's what I did quite a bit. Let's see if this somehow magically works again. I played on the Gathering album, and let's see, does this play? Oh, the high stuff? You're just doing that kind of high stuff. I think we do this song tomorrow. It's in B flat. And that just adds like this really cool layer of ambient playing. If you don't have a keyboard, that can be really great. We did that a lot on, I don't think I threw All I Have Is Christ in here. That one, you know, we did that a lot too. another way to do that, if you don't have a reverb pedal or your reverb pedal just kind of isn't doing it for you, and I would crank up the effect level on your reverb pedal to do that, you can use delay. Let's take some delay, and what you have to do with your delay is create an almost unusable trail. Just of delay. So that's not bad. I'm going to crank my repeats on my delay. So think about if you played a solo line and that was going on. It would get really messy pretty quickly. But what you do... Okay. See? Yeah. What you do is, again, you get out on your volume pedal or your volume knob. So you're cutting away the attack, because that's what the delay grabs onto, that does the echo, 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 echo. And I take a chord, and let's take just this G chord, that's the one that's in the packet, like written out. And I'm gonna strike it, I'm gonna swell in. And now I've got a lot of sustain. And what it does is just, you have no attack, and it just carries on that swell for a long time, and you can, that's too long for me. I would probably lower it a little bit, so I'm gonna lower the repeats. I tend to, if you use delay, if you don't, you can refer back to this and we can talk about it more. I crank the effect level a little bit and I raise the repeats and I get that kind of sort of loud sound. With the delay, you might get kind of like a wah, wah, wah sort of a thing, but you can kind of keep adding the sound in and out, like. And that sort of helps a little bit. You can't be too fast with it, because then you'll get that. You can't be too late with it. That one didn't work so badly, actually. Or you might not get enough signal. And so it tends to be useful to have like a little bit of gain going, to crank the level a bit on your delay, and to really have a lot of repeats that would usually be kind of unusable. So that's where you can get two ways to kind of get good swell sounds. If you don't want to just do it without anything. Because, you know, it's nice to kind of have that ambient sort of length on there. And that can be really great, just kind of over the top of a chord progression, you know, starting that off. And if you have a trail on it that's long enough, you know, there's a lot of overlap from here's the sound, and then the next one sort of starts there, and it never sort of has an open spot, and it's a really cool sound. I've heard beautiful examples of this on acoustic. using a volume pedal and maybe some delay or reverb or something like that, and you swell into that long sound, and it's really gorgeous, really, really beautiful. So that's kind of what I do a lot for that kind of ambient sort of swell playing. One thing that you do for your ambient playing that's really useful is this tremolo picking. Just kind of straight, it would sound like this. Which, you know, it's like a mandolin does that. But if you add some delay, let's say our tune is in that tempo. I'm not going to make it like in time with it. I'm just going to... See how it kind of like fills in the gaps a little bit? That's cool, but I'd like to add a little touch of reverb to it as well, so it sounds a little bit more washy. And let's take the beginning of something like Shine Into Our Night. You know that song? Love that song. We need more good songs like that that just deal with confession. It's so good. Okay, let's say this is like the instrumental or the intro or something like that. I'm gonna do my delay thing. Just that right there adds that kind of high layer. You don't really have to have that much effects. I like a little reverb and delay on there. Don't move around too much because it's not a solo. And it's a cool sound, but it's just that tremolo. I find it helps to kind of brace my arm on the guitar and sort of do that, because it has to be kind of fast. And you're trying to blend in, not say, hey, this is me, you know, playing on the guitar kind of a thing. Let me play you a couple examples of that. Anybody listen to the page CXVI or CVXI or whatever? Really cool group of people who are doing like these hymn revisions. They do this a lot. And when you're coming up with parts on acoustic or electric, don't play all the time. Think about like really creating, hear that? You hear it in a second. Think about creating like layers of sound. If you have a piano player doing that in the middle, don't go in the same range. Go up high, even on acoustic. To trust in Jesus and to take it just kind of builds and builds. Jesus, just to trust his cleansing blood. It's more kind of mid-range. Faith to plunge beneath the around there. Simple little melody line. Hear that high thing? Jesus, Jesus, how I trust. That can really add a whole lot, and that's not very hard. But your point isn't to show off. Your point isn't to say, hey, look at me. Your point is, you know, to create, you know, a beautiful, well, the point is to create a beautiful arrangement. But as a musician, you're seeking to, you know, serve the lyrics, the arrangement that's accompanying the content of what you're singing about that would set that beautifully. And these little kind of tremolo things or those swell things work really well. They did that, think how great you are. I should just play that anyway. Around, yep. Right here, as you transition to this part, it empties out, and you can hear a lot of this. Just immediately into that sound. It's a long, sustained sound. And it really sort of sets kind of that ambient sort of sound. So, there's some examples of that. Really useful and pretty easy, too. Let's see. There's only a couple million things we can talk about. That was the last Sovereign Grace album, From Age to Age.
The before.
Oh, Page, CXVI. Yeah, it's like a Narnia reference, one of the books there. Yeah, they only do hymns, but they have some awesome, awesome arrangements. Really beautiful. Be Still My Soul, great, great hymn. Just, and listen just to the parts. You know, not everyone's going in on a rhythm together all at once at the beginning. Piano part, high sustain layer. That could be a guitar thing. There's a cool electric part here. He's just doing this. It's really, really simple. The stuff that you can come up with does not have to be like, look at the scale. You know, it's like, here's two notes from the scale that it's like a hook. It's like an idea. And so you think with something that's catchy like that, something in a range that someone else is not, so that you don't have like this, everybody cramming in the mid-range, you know, because I was sitting with our piano player one day. I said, where do you just play when you're just kind of driving really big? And he's like, oh, right here. And I was like, okay, where's that note? Oh, that's my G chord. So when I'm doing that, he's doing that too. And so you're doing the same thing. So that's where capoing up or getting out of that zone on the electric can really help. And the electric guitar is a little tricky like that because, I mean, here's an octave. That looks like, you know, a really long distance. Think about an octave on a piano. You could do it with one hand. Think about three notes away. It's like this. But on the guitar, it looks really big. So you're not as high as you think you are when you're away. If you're down here, you're not really much away from like everyone else that's playing down there. Also, if you're on the inner string, that's the same as that's the same as that. So, you know, really don't be afraid to get up higher with a capo, as long as it sounds good, because sometimes that low thing is exactly what you want because you're the person down there. really think about spreading out and thinking of a hook kind of a part. Really being sensitive to like the full dynamic range of your band, who's where and not getting in the way. There's a lot more that we could talk about, but the point is that I'm gonna follow a lot up with the website just to continue to be, you know, hopefully build the resource here for you. But do you have any questions? You wanna talk about anything as applied to like your home church, problem things you're having? You wanna go back over anything here? You wanna talk about gear, whatever.
What is a quick rule for key changes on the fly? There's a transitional chord, like, you know, you're going from C to, A.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Not a typical chord change, you know, key change progression. Or a half, you know, typically, or are you doing a half step?
Yeah. It depends. He was asking, like, rules for, like, key changes and stuff like that, modulations. Yeah, you can do a couple things. Like, let's see if this is here. Let's say we're going to C to G. There's a common tone in between them, so sometimes you can, like, you know, be building, chord progression goes. You know, and you're back into, like, the key of G now, and you have this common transition chord, which is like, I belong to this key, and I belong to this key, and I'm sort of the bridge in between. The 5 chord in any key, this is just a rule in theory, the 5 chord is like a really powerful, well, that, yeah, I mean, that can also be kind of hokey. You know, you could do, you know, which takes you back. But yeah, that, yeah, 5/7s are not allowed in this stuff. It just sounds so, okay. But the 5 chord, like we did something, and we didn't have much time to rehearse it, so on In Christ Alone this last week, we were going from D to E, E at the very end. I know it's a little high, but, you know, we were into it. So, in the name of Christ I stand, 2, 3, 5 chord, in Christ alone. It's not going to win, like, whatever. I just get Oscars and Grammys mixed up. It's not going to win a Grammy or something, but, you know, it'll get you there. So the 5 chord is the one that says, I want to go here to this new key or something like that. But you don't have to do that. Some of the coolest ways are just, like, with that transition chord in between. Or just being creative, you know. if it sounds good, it works. You have a question?
Me?
Or next to him. I think it was you, yeah.
What effects are you using on your clean sound? What all are you using?
Yeah, that's a great question. We can talk a little bit about effects here. Effects, you can quickly get sucked into the maniacal desire. They call it GAS, the gear acquisition syndrome. You can quickly get into, I need boutique gear. I need to spend money, you know, on this stuff, where you don't really. But, you know, nice stuff can do some nice things, too. Right now, for just the clean sound, I have a compressor and a little touch of reverb. So the reverb, oops, and a tiny bit of delay. This would be good to talk about a delay, too. There's totally straight. I like the reverb, just a touch of it. Here, just a little bit of like space that it gives you. You can use more excessive reverb for, you know, effects and stuff, and that can be cool. But just a little bit, the difference between that and it's just a lot drier. And I tend to think about delay in these ways. And I'll have a, I can recommend gear to you if any of you have questions on that too. But I tend to recommend to students like this DL4, this Line 6 thing. Yeah, there are fancier ones, but I love on that one that it has three presets that you can save settings to, so you can have quickly different delay settings rather than, hold on a second, you know, let me twist something. but I have a little bit of delay that I keep on all the time, and it's set so that with delay you have like the amount of repeats and you have like the effect of those repeats. A good way to see how much you have is just to hold the guitar neck like this and see what that is. Or how many repeats you have there. And this won't get in the way of my chords and stuff. But you can hear that little bit of a trail that it just lends, rather than just being straight clean. And it's just more inspiring to have a little touch of reverb and delay. And that's, you know, I set it on, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 repeats, but pretty low in the mix. For a solo, I would want to have it a little bit more present. You know, a little bit more, so it was kind of playing around there. One other thing that's worth mentioning on delay is this like dotted eighth thing. That's a really kind of contemporary sound. I don't know what's going on out there. Oh, it's probably David getting ready. But this dotted eighth setting, you can tap in with delay. You can tap in, let's say we have a tempo around here. You can tap in quarter notes. And if you tapped a little better than that, it would be, you know, right there. If I have a song that maybe is a little slower, I might tap in eighths. Something like that. But that kind of goes with your... It's kind of masked by your sound. This dotted eighth setting, some pedals have it built in where you can just, you know, click on it. If you really want to know how to tap in dotted eighths, I can show you how to do that. If you don't have a setting for it, but that plays in between your notes. So I'm just playing down, 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 down. This is something I think, like the Edge from U2 was the guy who like really made it popular, and he was the only guitar player in the band. And so filling out the sound, you know, that really adds a lot. And at a lower mix, you know, it can be a cool thing. Like we have an arrangement of Crown Him with Many Crowns. It starts off like that. That's using that effect, but you'll hear this all the time on a lot of Hillsong stuff. On our arrangement of, he's testing kick. On our arrangement of, hear how it bounces around with the sound. That dotted eighth is a really cool sound. But really, I just had a compressor, which really evens out the sound for you. It can kind of make your guitar sound a little fatter too, because it's bringing up the level of every string. But it just has, I've had on a really kind of low setting, I have this one pedal that lets you blend in the effect in and out. Sometimes, and this is what's cool, like this is a nice little amp. With an amp like this, it's lower wattage. On electric, this is, you know, the overdrive sound that everyone talks about as being great naturally comes from amps being turned up to like ear bleeding levels. back in the day when you did that. but now you can do that a lot with pedals, or smaller wattage amps are, I think, the way to go. Even a cheaper one like a Blues Junior is a fantastic little amp. Or a Vox AC15, they're great amps. You can get more expensive ones for sure. But those are good because you can crank it more and not have it be so ear-bleedingly loud. But I will sort of mimic that with a pedal a little bit. And so what you'll have is, not the ear-bleedingly loud part, but a little bit of dirt on your sound. And that's just a little bit of overdrive. Like that sound, maybe even a less than that. Let's dial this back a little bit. I'll have it set. That sounds sort of clean, right? But if I really push it, it's got a little bit more grit to it. And so that's kind of nice. Just, it has a character of sound. Two, three, four. That's just different from clean. That's kind of nice. One other thing that you can do is, on your overdrive, lower your volume knob just a bit, and that cleans up on the sound. That kind of a thing. So that's, I'll generally have that going too. It's a little bit loud in here. But I'll have just a tiny bit of dirt or grit or overdrive, just a tiny bit. And I would lean towards overdrive more than distortion for general, like pop styles, not just, you know, worship music and stuff, just because it's a little less face melting. There are points where you'd use it. But yeah, just simple like compressor and reverb and maybe a little bit of dirt. Other than that, start with a tuner. That's really important. There are some cool ones out there we can talk about. Boss TU-2. Like I said, if you have lots of stuff to play but you sound awful, including being out of tune, which maybe a little bit. I detuned this so many times in the airport. I had a big layover, so I had it with me. So I'd tune it down to get ready to go on the airplane, and then there was, you know, a delay. And so I tune it back and start practicing again. So it got tuned up like 4 times yesterday. What was I saying with that? Just sounding good. You know, you got to have a tuner. The Polytune is a cool one. You can get the really expensive strobo tuner, but the Boss one is great. Then I have the compressor into an overdrive that I like. I have another overdrive if I want something bigger. This one happens to have a boost on it. It's called a Tim pedal. That's sort of generally what I need, though, for a lot of stuff, because that can be pretty big. Then, you know, another one, a different flavor if I really wanted to push it, maybe for like a lead line or something. But not all of your lead lines have to be blistering. They could be clean and sound really good too. I then have this freeze pedal, which is, you know, kind of a unique one. It's not like an essential one at all. Then delay, I use this Strymon Timeline, which is a really powerful, really awesome delay pedal that's also pretty expensive. And then a MIDI controller to kind of get into that more, so it has delay settings and stuff, into reverb, and that's kind of it.
How do you have your amp set
then? My amp at home,
How do you set your amp channel, you know, high, low, bass?
Oh, you know, that's a really great question. And someone asked from the last conference, maybe you could do something about, you know, how to set your amp or pedals and stuff. And really, the biggest thing is you should use your ear. Because no two pedals are the same. So you might have like a Blues Junior at home and you find a Blues Junior at church, but they're not going to be exactly the same with, like, you know, where the knobs are and stuff. And also the power that's different in different buildings can affect how your gear reacts, and so that's just going to be different. I put so much emphasis on using your ear because I have a 3-year-old who loves my pedal board and amps, and he just goes, and so, you know, you get it really attached to, I got it, this is perfect, I'm going to keep it right here forever. And then, you know, he comes in and everything is different. And you think, okay, I got to recreate something. But that's kind of what I was doing earlier. I was just kind of like listening. Another really important kind of basic thing is to have your clean sound and that overdriven sound pretty equal. You don't want to have like a big jump either way. And so I was kind of going back and forth, making sure they were about the same. But I will set the amp. There are lots of different, you can find things online for like the magic Fender dial in, you know, your treble to 6 and your bass to 2 and your mids to 3 and crank the gain a little bit and stuff. And that's like the classic Fender sound or something. But just really use your ears. You know, the mids can actually cause a little bit of overdrive if it's cranked. I like to have it pushed a little bit. In a lower wattage amp, you can do that without it being too loud, or one that has a master volume. You can crank the tubes and keep the master volume low, so that gives you kind of that overdrive a little bit, which is nice. Did I answer your question? Oh, amps. Yeah, one thing with your pedals and stuff, and this goes for your amp too, they all have like these tone controls or treble controls. And I like to set mine a little bit bright so that I can roll off it with the with my tone knob a little bit. So the edge is off a little bit. Now it's... Because sometimes when you're playing live, your sound just isn't cutting. And so I like to have a little bit of flexibility with kind of making it a little bit brighter. But I'll try to take the edge off that, roll back from the edge of that kind of ice-picky treble sound. I generally keep the bass not too high. The mids, I kind of play around with it. I've had a lot of experience with my three-year-old just doing that. But with your pedals, this is kind of a related issue. You want it to kind of sound like your guitar. And so you don't really know, this even with amps, you don't really know if you just go to plug in your amp and you're like, okay, here, I'll set it here. You don't really know what it sounds like. I would really sweep, like, what does it sound like with the bass cranked? What does it sound like with the crank the other way? And all those things, because have you done that before? I'd say, I hadn't for a long time until I started doing that, just to get, like, what's it sound like this? What's it sound like this? You know, so that you can really have an opinion on what's possible to sound like out of your gear. And, your tone control on your pedals, that's really important to listen, to not turn it on and have it be like, it's like, okay, good, I'm set. But no, to really, does that sound like my guitar? No. So now, I'm going to fix that. That's better, more in the ballpark. So it kind of matches your sound a little bit, because every pedal can wildly affect the way that your guitar sounds, and you want to keep it consistent if, and hopefully you do, like the sound of your clean guitar, which is the important place to start. You want to do that. So we're technically done here. I'm happy to talk more if people want to hang afterwards. We can even maybe keep something rolling, or maybe you have to go. But I'm happy to talk after... Now I don't really have anywhere to go. Throughout the conference, if I can help you out, if you have questions about the website, the one post specifically for you, I'm happy to talk about all this stuff. We didn't talk about guitar cases, which is a big thing, pedal boards, power supplies, so much. Cool. Well, let me pray just to end, to pray for you guys. Lord, I thank you again for this opportunity. I pray that you would just hopefully make it useful to anybody listening or anybody here. I pray that you would bless these men and women as they've come, bless them as they come and put the time in to come out to this conference. I pray that you would equip them. I pray that you would encourage them as they go back and serve the body where you put them. I just ask that you would be pleased to work among them, to bless them during the conference, to go back equipped and encouraged, to glorify you through what they're doing. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.